Blog Talk Radio.
Eat the war. Eat the war. Eat the war. Eat the war.
What's the problem? You don't like the suit that I got bubbling in my cauldron. You mad cause I wax poetic about the moon and stars. And me belly full of but your poultry rhymes is clearly starved. I'm building with the gods back in my organic garden. My crew rock amber rings and fitted caps. Black is the new dress, it's time that you admitted that. I like them boys on the dean, repping red, black, and green. They ain't scared to speak up cause they saying what they mean. Supreme team, team, team. Put the ig in Elohim. Streets keeping it dirty, but we keep our sneakers clean. I'm waging war, maxi dresses, lifestyle pristine. Battle plans are slain between the cold lines of my 16. The mean with a flow to turn a stain into a fiend. It's hard as some for rappers, spit lame bars like Kadeem. Brain lean, mind heavy set. Tell me, are you ready yet? Master in the ring, you can call me champion.
Eat the war, eat the war, eat the war, eat the war.
I plan with generals in the beaches, synagogues, drinking gunpowder, tea, spike the traits, minerals. We raise the dead with slick verbs and now tenses. Rhymes open up and activate the five senses. Cleaning house like I'm venting these dudes is really lynching. Shoot a poison dart with every dumbed down sentence. We jewel like hope diamond, stolen from holy land. Show you fake like holographic raindrops in Japan. She cool, I guess people sing it like her style. Excuse me, can I hold that go in mic for a while? Actually, you don't mind, I'm finna bite your style. Let me get your CD, I'ma go and write for a while. That's okay, cause I get my dopest balls from the marshes. Way up in deep space on my precious starship. Sick as dudes on the mic that said I was a monster. Now give me your flight quick, I'm ready for sponsors. Yep, 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 yep.
Eat the war. Eat the war. Eat the war. Eat the war.
If you ain't heard it yet, this is my official war cry. Me and rap go together like best and poor guy. Poor guy still think he got a chance with the whiz, but I told him he look warm and need to come with more fire. Sure, I brought my people to this vessel, gon' die. Come back with dope rhymes and fits us even more fly. My dude control cries by spinning the 4-5. Wind them up to them folks is ready to floor dive. Like incense and ox and chant down Babylon. I'm a beast in this thing like freaks at Dragon Con. My mystical elixir got you tipsy like you own one. I ain't had to learn the MC, damn it, I was born one. Currency flowing right, well maybe I can't perform one. I get you high without having to burn one. Keep quiet, listen close, and maybe you learn some. Put that work at that altar and later you earn some. So pray, 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 pray.
Eat the war, eat the war, eat the war, eat the war.
Ain't no,
the Catholics and the Protestants, you all are fighting, but yet still you can talk and try to negotiate. Can I say you're a hypocrite? You're a Catholic and we fight the Protestants, and I see you over there doing business with our Protestants. You are a, or whatever this is, whoever's fighting down here. You all do business together. That don't mean you're a hypocrite because you're intelligent, you're doing business. Nixon or somebody, whatever they see, Mao or China, his arch enemy, want to blow up America today, but they still talk and do business and try. Now, I'm a hypocrite because I got a white fella working for me in all white country. I'm a hypocrite because I got white fans.
No, no,
this
no,
is silly. So why do you read something like it? Just say, ain't you
my
sickness? No, I ain't
you
my
you,
no, I done you, read you, and I done no, got came on you. You ain't used to no black man and mainly no boxer having no sense. I'm not just a boxer. I'm taught by Elijah Muhammad. I can talk all week on millions of subjects. And you do not have enough wisdom to call me on television. You do not have enough. You are too small mentally to tackle me on nothing that I represent. I'm serious. You and this little TV show is nothing to Muhammad Ali. And you got some more questions than I have. And I bet you I'll eat you up right here on there. There ain't no way you can tackle me. All of you are tricky.
It's the Phantom of the Chakra, Slumdog Opera, Rap Radar 9 Right, OK Player Mashup. I went from nothing to something like the planet Earth. I showed these major labels how to make a man from dirt and breathe in his nostrils, fill him up with gospel, leave him at the mountaintop, blasting at the Rothschilds. Who that? JLX Zulu man, from the lost land of Mook, stands the Zulu stand. Just real black history, Robert Leroy Ripley. Believe it or not, I'm gonna spit it till they strip me. Crown me with thorns, march me up the hill, crucifix me and ditch me. The rest is all mystery. I'll be in New Orleans making water out of whiskey, casting judgment on the IRS who audited the gypsies. kiss it. I got the game tipsy. Staggering out the club, dropping coins in the jitney. Papers of nobility.
Aboriginal Radio. This is your host, Dr. Ali Muhammad of the Aboriginal Republic of North America and the International Indigenous Society. We are glad to be back after a while, taking off, doing other types of work. We are back on the airways, live again. Call-in number tonight, for those who would like to call in, is 646-381-4991. Our discussion tonight is related to a biological health tour that we are currently on, and we are discussing the genetic fear of a black planet. And I titled that for the tour with the hopes that I and Minister Inky and the sisters who are also participating, have participated with us, could go around the nation and give out rare information that is already in print that they might not have access to because of economic or other reasons, and then also to introduce them to our Indigenous Health Institute, the Honor Isis Health Ministry, and the Aboriginal Medical Association as an instrumentality and ministry of an Indigenous government that was formed for them, with the hopes that they would see, could see, comprehend the end game and the goal. The goal is to move our people, one, away from European institutions in respect to credentialing themselves and moving out into the populace to perform what would be considered health-related labor tasks. We want to move them away from institutions that have been genocidal, predatory, and dysfunctional for them. So we formed the world's first Indigenous certification system, published the materials for that particular system, and have been operating it for some years now. And we're doing the genetic fear of a black planet tour to introduce people to that. We hope that they will understand that we're coming with a completely new health paradigm. New in the sense that we have natural ways to take diagnostics that are not dependent upon manufacturing of anything by other peoples. So that is a gift for our people. If they will receive that gift, those who do receive it and act out on the guidance that we have been giving and will continue to give, will do see the results. The results look like us having the ability to easily remove any disease state that you have made claim to because of a diagnostic amongst a group of people who are not even prepared properly to give diagnostics. And when I say diagnostics, I'm talking about in our indigenous sense of looking at a person and telling them overall what is the problem that they have based on causation factors, and then prescribing a methodology and a set of behaviors and actions that will resolve that particular problem. The European medical system cannot offer solutions for that. In fact, there is no black institution, no indigenous institution in the Western Hemisphere that we know of, besides the Ana Isis Health Ministry, that is giving a total indigenous policy of treatment to cure the psycho and the somatic states of disease amongst our people. And when I say psychosomatic, I mean mind-body, so that we can understand some things tonight that we're going to lay down as far as our standards. Our standards are rooted in our biocosmology certification, and we advocate what we call the real bodybuilding concept. And the real bodybuilding concept is rooted in classification of species based on whether they are phototrophs or heterotrophs. And that simply means that phototrophs are solar or sun synthesized organisms. They have a reciprocal relationship with the sun and the earth. And in that synthesis of a relationship, they have the ability, when they are taught culturally, traditionally, and scientifically properly, to not have to experience any disease state, including areas of mental or psychological disease, or what we might call spiritual disease. And in looking at phototrophs being synthesized to solar radiation, we juxtapose that to heterotrophs, which are anti-solar and are non-permanent species upon this planet, which we can specifically identify when they came about, and we can identify the causation factors that are removing them as a non-permanent species or organisms, group of organisms that live in the plant kingdoms and the mammal kingdoms as well. So our discussions, although they can be made socio-political, are purely scientifically measurable and are verifiable in our own experiments and in the experiments that I will talk about from Europeans today. So we do have a complete paradigm that is working and progressing itself through the various necessary investment mechanisms to grow larger. We do solicit support from our people, and any of you who are interested in learning about us can go to www.aboriginalmedicalassociation.org and learn all about what we are doing. And you can get the information from the tour on that particular site. As a matter of fact, I'll just throw that in the chat so that but anybody online who is listening can have that website so that we can stay in tune. Along with the Aboriginal Medical Association being formed as a conduit for the Ana Isis Health Ministries, we have also embarked upon initiating our Aboriginal Farming Project. And Aboriginal Farming Project is designed and tailored towards producing and cultivating foods that are non-adverse to the genomes of indigenous peoples. And when we say non-adverse, what we mean is that 100% of the cultivators of farming foods, domesticated foods, are participating in processes that are adverse to the genomes of our people, which in discussing the Human Genome Project today and the Out of Africa theory, we're going to lay a pretty good base for you to get a ground floor of understanding what we get certified in within our own health ministries. But to say that, to discuss the farming mechanisms, it falls right into line with the phototroph, heterotroph classification system that we have designed. And everything falls within that. And this is why we mention it, because if you learn those and coming amongst us, then we are laying a well-grounded foundation for you to interpret environmental sciences, whether it be in biology and other areas. All right. So when we look, at farming techniques today, there are synthetic fertilizers that are added to foods, and there are some farmers who think that they're adding organic fertilizers to food, and they are not. They are disturbing the production of the food, and there are better mechanisms that we have experimented on to produce food, and there are better ways to deal with domestication or cultivation. And ultimately, despite the fact that most of y'all do not like when I talk like this, but I have to continue to say it, ultimately, if we are considered what I call class A aboriginal species or a certain haplotype of so-called Africoids, we belong in a certain environment on this planet, and most of us who live in certain areas within the United States of America or on the North American landmass are outside of those natural areas that we should live in. And it is an issue of resource management that is keeping us, or lack thereof, that is keeping us in these very poor conditions and not working together. This is a part of what we're going to talk about with the Human Genome Project, because the larger part of the Human Genome Project is really upgraded eugenics, okay? And because our people are not getting the proper cultural guidance and mathematical guidance, social mathematics, if we can offer that term, meaning that there's a set of principles that we can live by, that if we work together based on those principles as original people, not just on this landmass, but all across the planet, if we can work on these basic principles together, then we can neutralize the adverse impact of those who are attempting to do things to us to our own detriment. And by neutralizing that, we can focus our energies on our own sustainability and survival, which is a big part of our discussion that we're going to ask about the real end game of the Human Genome Project and those who offer the Out of Africa theory. What are they? What are the end games of these particular people? What do they want to accomplish? What was and are their developmental goals that came about from their theories? For those of us who may not be as mature as we need to be about this subject, I'm going to help you mature somewhat. And in doing so, we'll be able to see that that we are being played. There's no other way, there's no other way to discuss that. So as we discuss the food, as we discuss the all of the areas that are important, then all we have left to say to our people is that our solution that we are offering is a step-by-step progressive procedure to get us to operate in governmental fashion through the various councils and sub-departments that can unite us in a very simple way, in a very understandable way, in a very politically sound way, in a very economically sound way, in a very mature manner in approach to the problems that we see going on. All right, so as we look at the things that we are suffering on this planet, we should consider the fact that there are things that we could do to change what is going on. So with that being said about the farming and the synthetic things that are being added to it, I'll go into more detail as we go. I think we want 3 hours tonight, so we have some time to do so. And we will allow for Q&A. Again, our call-in number 646-381-4991. Our discussion tonight is on debunking the Human Genome Project and the Out of Africa theory. Our premise is that these are eugenic-based theories and scientific processes that have a different end game than most people think. Most people think it's just a collection of information to map out what genes look like to help people for disease and other things that are, you know, could be the population could be subjected to. But our premise tonight is that that is not the end game, that the end game is to set up a set of false factors to make them appear to look real and then to use the deception for commercial gain and social control to create an apparent authority in science, and thus by creating an apparent authority in science, it allows for one group of people to position themselves as the exclusive voice on a subject, and therefore allows for the people who don't have institutions to bow down. So our response is first to create the institutions that can sift through the data, interpret the data, and allow you to, you know, not fall victim to the traps. Because what happens when you fall victim to the traps is your women and your children end up in their institutions because they're freaked out about episode because of a lack of culture, a lack of obedience to natural law, and subjecting themselves to their natural enemies. That is all that is happening. So the brutal mental death and ignorance of black women or original women or indigenous women in not being educated according to their own scientific and inside of their own scientific institutions causes the commercial, economic, health, and social and mental deprivation of the entire family and thus subjects us to believing in anyone who can come up in a white coat and tell us this is what we found. This is our new theory. This is how things went. We want you to get educated in it, and either you work for us or you become a customer. And this type of foolishness pervades even the men who call themselves men who do not understand that if you are on this chessboard with this devil and you are not going to step up and be a man, you have just folded your whole family up in a suitcase. So you might as well be a little pimp or whatever it's you know calling yourself these days if you're not going to have the institutions that you need. So what we're going to do is take a quick break, and then we're going to come right back and get this underway. Again, you're listening to Aboriginal Radio. We'll be right back with you in just a few moments.
Are you having legal troubles? Indigenous peoples worldwide need to have the understanding that they have the power now to form their own jurisdictions. The Aboriginal Republic of North America has formed the world's first fully operational indigenous legal institution with over 100 Aboriginal jurists. We're here for you. Contact us at www.aboriginalglobalmedia.com and www.aboriginalnetwork.ning.com. We are here for you. Enter our plebiscite. Declare your indigenous nationality. Change your commercial and economic state. Learn to build institutions. become an Aboriginal jurist. Join our Jural Society. We have legal remedy now available for those who have suffered genocide and denationalization. Contact us again, isislawmasters@gmail.com.
The Catholics and the Protestants, you all are fighting, but yet still you can talk and try to negotiate. Can I say you're a hypocrite? You're a Catholic and we're fighting the Protestants, and I see you over there doing business with our Protestants. You are a, or whatever this is, whoever's fighting down here. You all do business together. That don't mean you're a hypocrite because you're intelligent, you're doing business. Nixon or somebody, whatever they see, Mao or China, his arch enemy, want to blow up America today, but they still talk and do business and try. Now, I'm a hypocrite because I got a white fella working for me in all white country. I'm a hypocrite because I got white fans.
No, this is silly.
So why don't you read something like it and just say, ain't you my sickness? No, I ain't missing nothing.
I done read you, and I came on you.
You ain't used to no black man and mainly no boxer having no sense. I'm not just a boxer. I'm taught by Elijah Muhammad. I can talk all week on millions of subjects. And you do not have enough wisdom to corner me on television. You do not have enough. You are too small mentally to tackle me on nothing that I represent. I'm serious. You and this TV show is nothing to Muhammad Ali. And you got some more questions that have them. I bet you I'll eat you up right here on there. It ain't no way you can tackle me. All of you are tricky.
It's the Phantom of the Chakra, Slumdog Opera, Rap Radar 9, right? Okay, play a mashup. I went from nothing to something like the planet Earth. I showed these major labels how to make a man from dirt and breathe in his nostrils, fill him up with gospel, leave him at the mountaintop, blasting at the Rothschilds. Who that? JLX, Voodoo Man, from the lost land of Moose, Sands and Zulu scans, just real black history. Robert Leroy Ripley, believe it or not, I'm gonna spit it till they strip me. Crown me with thorns, march me up the hill, crucifix me and ditch me. The rest is all mystery. I'll be in New Orleans making water out of whiskey, casting judgment on the IRS who audited the gypsies. Tipsy, I got the game tipsy, staggering out the club, dropping coins in the jitney, papers of nobility.
You get me on your show, and ask me what I'm thinking. You ready for me?
Bud Schoberg
said, this was a big bomb he's going to drop on me now. Bud Schoberg says you got white men working in your camp, and you're teaching to white men the devil. I'm supposed to be trapped now. And look there, how you going to trap me? How you going to get me on the TV and trap me?
You can read this damn book all you want, and mister, and my leader is Elijah Muhammad, who preaches the doom of America,
and the biggest white people in America who are wiser than you here, they don't tackle us. Now, how are you going to get me on a TV show and get something ready for me? You had to have it all planned. I didn't know you had a book waiting for me and going to ask me all this. Behind stage is so nice, and you're so, we have a nice talk, and then you get me on TV. This is a serious thing you got me with. You are contradicting. You're attacking my religion. You're turning white people who are associates. They're like, I'm thinking they're devils and I'm mad. And you got me on a TV show that's serious. And this is a death question. Suppose I couldn't answer that. You had me cornered.
That's why I said you like it.
Like what? Yeah, you laugh now because I caught you.
All right, family. Welcome back. Your host here, Dr. Ali Muhammad. You're listening to Aboriginal Radio. Our call-in number tonight is 646-381-4991 for those who want to call in. Our discussion tonight is debunking the Human Genome Project and the Out of Africa Theory. We are discussing this as a part of a general education for our Arna ISIS Health Ministry. We are starting our next certification set of courses on April the 14th, Sunday next week, 8:15 a.m. Eastern Standard Time. If there's anyone who wants to sign up, you can inbox me on Facebook at Aboriginal Chief Ali, or you can send me an email at isishealthmasters@gmail.com. Our sign-ups are done via our website, indigenousgovernment.org. Again, that is indigenousgovernment.org. If you go to indigenousgovernment.org, www.indigenousgovernment.org, and you sign up, we will send the complete package out to you, and that package will include a full text manual of the coursework along with the 7 homework assignments that come with the level 1 coursework. with access to the online DVD classes as well as the video CDs. And we do live classes every Sunday for your phase one of your level course, which is a homework assignments and class discussion. And then you will have a testing mechanism that you are given to complete. Once you complete your examination, you go to phase two, which is implementation of everything that you learn. And in this course, you're going to learn about Black biology as we are the first credentialing institution in the world that credentials indigenous people to learn about their biology since the slavery epoch has created this madness. And in doing so, we also take the students through the understanding of biocosmology, which is studying the 13 systems that the body has and discussing the mineral content of those systems and ways to keep them healthy through using fruits and plants as a basis for either removal of toxins or neutralizing of toxins and regeneration of tissues. We also teach diagnostics, indigenous diagnostics through full body reading, reading parts of the body, face, hair, hands, eyes, lips, tongue, other aspects of things that we have created that have never existed before, such as astrodenition, which is looking at the teeth and telling what's somatically going on in the cells and psychologically going on in the mind, as well as taking the students into a newer aspect of integrating the indigenous biodiagnostics with some machinery that we use called quantum magnetic analyzers that makes a synthesis between our indigenous diagnostics and the best on the planet in magnetic analysis of all organ systems. So we do all of that, and you don't have to pay $30,000 to get a PhD and get dumbed down. Our coursework is only $500, and that coursework will produce the finest, most brilliant doctors on the planet in studying not only the biology of Black people, the original people on the planet, but all other anatomies and offering the proper guidance for indigenous peoples politically. And again, being accredited and certified in your own government through your own institutions. I don't think that you can get any better than that. And if you have something better than that to offer, I would like to participate in it because I am about success. With that being said, the lack of success is based on us following after paradigms that have been adverse to us, adverse socially, politically, mentally, educationally, etc. And following after the theories of white people is one of them. That is a major catalyst to confusion or using colloquial discussion as a basis for science when you have not either formed your own institutions and or read enough of the literature on Europeans to see they're double talking. All right. So we're going to start off with the out of Africa theory, but it's synonymous to the Human Genome Project because both of them are for eugenic-based end games for white people to keep dominance and control over the educational institutions of the world and to intentionally and purposefully block you from studying the past records of indigenous history, which you think are primitive in the way of non-technical, which you could not possibly be wronger than you know having that erroneous thought. The civilizations that came prior to Europeans back into antiquity were the most technologically sound institutions that we could produce at any given epoch. Anybody can slip on a banana peel, and our ancestors did that. So we are thus in this particular situation as a result of not following the best of what we had to offer. And in doing so, now we have to turn back and look at the mistakes that we have made and then counter those mistakes with the proper things to put in place. So, with that being said, what is going on with this out of Africa theory? Well, the beginnings of this theory starts with the founders of eugenics. Most people don't look at Charles Darwin as the founder of eugenics. They look at his cousin, Francis Galton, as a founder of eugenics. But Charles Darwin and Thomas Huxley were the founders of the base of the out of Africa theory. In the material called The Descent of Man, Darwin was the first European to speculate that humans descended from apes and began to eventually evolve through the processes of natural selection and walk upright. And he labels those particular great apes or hominids as African, right? And a direct quote from him from The Descent of Man says, in each great region of the world, the living mammals are closely related to the extinct species of the same region. It is therefore probable that Africa was formerly inhabited by extinct apes closely allied to the gorilla and chimpanzee, and as these two species are now man's nearest allies, it is somewhat more probable that our early progenitors lived on the African continent than elsewhere. But it is useless to speculate on this subject for an ape nearly as large as a man, namely the Dryopithecus of Lartet, which was closely allied to the anthropomorphous Hylobates, existed in other parts of the planet. He goes on to talk about Europe and other places. But they proposed this. So the out of Africa theory comes from Charles Darwin. The reason why Charles Darwin is significant is because his cousin Francis Galton is the founder of modern day eugenics. And eugenics is the concept of the self-controlled evolution of the races on this planet. The self-control, meaning that one group of people will control the evolutionary destiny of another group of people through whatever means that they're going to use, which is usually through the institution set up in a society to make sure that those particular people become an asset and a collateral for the gentry, all right? So now when you look at black people all across the planet, original people all across the planet, various nationalities, they are on the bottom. Now you say, well, there are successful black people on the planet. Yes, there are, but they are not contending with the psychological and the institutional genocide that is being implemented on them, or the banning of their natural law systems in their ancient forms or in their successful forms, in the sense that they will compete with the rest of the world for self-sustaining without the tutelage of white folks or other groups of people who are of the same gene pool as that group of people. So Charles Darwin offered this, and now you have African scholars and others who are using this eugenicist family as the basis for their scientific claims. Now, without doing a composite study on the history of Charles Darwin, one cannot understand why he would have an end game or a desire to propose such a thing when he knew from the records of the Muslims, the black Muslims that he had studied, like Al-Jahiz, who gave him his first, teacher, who gave him his first lessons of the former world's concepts on the origin of man, woman, etc., from the works of Al-Jahiz. Al-Jahiz was a scholar of the 9th century in Arabia and then later in Baghdad, who made proposals about the origins of man and woman based on indigenous records, based on using Quranic sciences, etc. Charles Darwin borrowed from him and created what is called natural selection today and warped it away from its indigenous connotations. But my point is that the book Descent of Man, man first proposes this, and when you see the little pictures of the gibbons and the hominids ultimately standing up upright to look like human skeletal forms, that was proposed by anatomist Thomas Huxley, who was basically called the pit bull or the bulldog of Charles Darwin, all right? So all of these people were a part of families. Juxtaposed to that, James Watson, one of the founders of the modern templating of the DNA helix, was fired in 2007 for making a statement that peoples of African descent are less intelligent than Europeans. Why he's important is because he was working at the National Institute of Health when the Human Genome Project was crafted, and as a founder of templating the DNA helix with Francis Crick, he's also a eugenicist, all right? A knight knighted because of his work by Queen Elizabeth. So these are families of people. James Watson graduated from high school at the age of 14 and entered college at the age of 15 and graduated with his PhD by the time he was 22. So one of the things that I want to point out is that when we look at eugenics and we look at institutions, we are looking at people who form those institutions for their lineage and their race. So what do you have? And why are you so proud of arguing about things where you don't even have an institution to lay the base to make arguments? So I'm warning you, don't call in tonight with that craziness. All right, so what are the questions that we want to propose about the end games? Natural selection, which is allegedly survival of the fittest species. And the key question that we're asking tonight is this is the question that is being proposed by these eugenicists in their function, their social functions. And it was, how do we take those most fit to survive? Since natural selection deals with survival of the fittest, this is what their premise or their activity surrounds, this concept. How do we take those most fit to survive, who are those of African descent? How do we take those via self-control evolution and make them least fit to survive? This is why you have an out-of-Africa theory. This is why you have the cousin of the man who proposed the out-of-Africa theory, Francis Galton, coming with the concept of eugenics. This is why you have a Planned Parenthood. This is why you have black women who have no civilization, who are savage as hell, who open their legs for anybody because they haven't been taught the culture of civilization, going into Planned Parenthood and commercializing the aborted fetuses so that you can have companies like Celgene that give regeneration to old-ass white people through genetics labs that were set up to do just that. So none of this is happening without planning. For those who don't plan their own lives, they think stuff just happens haphazardly. No, this is what you call synchronized conspiracy, which takes it out of the fold of conspiracy and puts it into a plot. So their end game is, how do we take those most naturally fit to survive? The most naturally fit people to survive on this planet are the phototrophs, the organisms that are plants and humans who have a solar synthesized relationship with the sun and with the environment. They are most apt and fit to survive on this orb. All right? So how do we take those people who are most fit to survive and via self-control evolution, which is how they educate you, how they teach you, how they raise you up, how do we make these people, through our own self-control evolutionary actions, make them least fit to survive? You make them into dumb niggas. And then you say, don't listen to Ali Muhammad. Don't listen to Elijah Muhammad. Don't listen to the people who make it sense. Listen to the dumb niggas. Then we're going to program you genetically through the food to make you have the proclivity to listen to those people. We're going to get to it. All right, so the next question. All right. How do we take those least fit to survive, which are the Europeans, the Arabs, and these other hybrid races? How do we take those people via self-control evolution and make them most fit to survive? All right? So the answer is simple. Deception. 2, removal of all models and mechanisms that ensure their adaptability and survival, which includes their history, their real knowledge, or anybody that would teach them that, or anybody who would ask them to come into institutions, governments that are guided by their own principles. Let's remove those models and mechanisms and make them proud to be supported by white supremacy or whatever these things are that we're calling them. Next, after completely deceiving them and removing all models and mechanisms that ensure their adaptability and survival through the institutions and rites of passage and cultural education, after we remove that, then biologically use organisms that support the weaker, the white race, and are adverse to the stronger. All right? So I'm going to talk about how James Watson was in something called a phage group, and a phage is a virus. He was in a study group called the virus group or the phage group. So these people study tactically how to disarm you and how to improve their quality of life, even though they are not natural to this planet. And we put our faith in their institutions, their concepts, their ways and models of, their models of life. And they have completely deceived your women, so you can forget it. You ain't going nowhere until you fix that. So let's come to this Out of Africa theory. Now, the whole theory is erroneous because the theory proposes, and we're the only ones that have given a definitive answer for this. The theory proposes that you had hominidal apes, all right, who walked up out of Africa into various parts of the planet, settled in those parts of the planet, and then morphologically became the races that we know today. All right. Now, there's some very fundamental things that we need to understand. There are no apes that are going to evolve into human beings. It's impossible. No apes could just live and turn into humans. No hominids. None of this. This is completely ridiculous. 1,000 years from now, 1,000,000 years from now, none of the monkeys that are on the planet are going to go through some type of mechanism to ignite something to turn them into human beings. All right? So let's look at the theory in a more scientific way. When we look at the theory as it's proposed, it's already been debunked by the same people who proposed it. White people proposed the theory, then debunk it. All right? What we have proposed is the answer, and the answer is the biologies of the European matches the biologies of the various types of great apes, specifically chimpanzees and rhesus monkeys. In our genetic tour for a black planet in volume 3 of our lecture, all right, in New York was volume 3, we've been calling them volumes, I gave a full presentation on the shared anatomical and physiological neural processes, brain processes, and physiological tissues of Europeans as it relates to rhesus monkeys, specifically in that lecture. And what I proved unequivocally is that the rhesus monkey has a sulfur-based brain and a sulfur-based anatomy, and the sulfur-based pigment, and the Europeans have the same thing. We highlighted the global catastrophes that gave rise to their sulfur pigmentation. We also highlighted the studies that were done by the Europeans on the melanotropic peptide, proving that Europeans have a sulfur-based pigment and that black people have a what is called a eumelanin, that has a completely different configuration. So in that study, which is called the effects of a superpotent melanotropic peptide in combination with solar UV radiation on tanning of the skin in human volunteers, and this was done by Robert T. Dorr, Ph.D., Gregory Aretel, M.D., Norman Levine, M.D., Chris Brooks, CCRC, Jerry L. Bangard, M.D., all right, and in this study on the melanocortins family or the melanotropic peptide, which is studying melanin polymers, what they found out is that black people have a specific type of carbon polymer and white people don't have it. Not only did they find out that, they found out that it was sulfur-based, and there's a biological reason why it's sulfur-based, and we are the only ones to ever answer that particular question, which we're about to answer. So now, when we say melanin, melanin means carbon polymers. White people do not have melanin. I'm going to repeat. White people do not have melanin. A better word is pigment because of the biological basis of what they have. Now, you say we all have two eyes, two legs, two ears, two arms, so therefore we're all the same species. And that is not correct. There's a way that these people came about, and tonight you're going to learn about that. So in our Volume 3, of our Genetic Theory of a Black Planet tour, we discussed what's called the Lake Toba catastrophe. The Lake Toba catastrophe was a catastrophe that happened about 65,000 years ago in Sumatra that affected the whole Indian subcontinent and all of the areas of Southeast Asia, etc. It caused the planet to lose temperature, blocked out the sun for large periods of time on the Earth, caused the global temperature to recede, and release sulfur aerosols from the largest volcanic eruption in the history of the Earth, 8 on the volcanic measurement scale. So the result of that sulfur aerosol getting into the atmosphere is what caused the humans at that time to devolve into what we call now hominids, all right, Australopithecus afarensis and all of the others that have been classified. So when we are looking at the white race, we are looking at three phases. The three phases are thus: original people who got caught in global catastrophes, some of which were not accidental. Long periods of time without sunlight causing the current biology that they have that are anti-solar, which are proven in the study that I'm about to read, which we call sunburn cells. Through the development of those biologies, they devolved down into these hominids or monkeys. And at later points in time, the original people who were not susceptible to those catastrophes came back and experimented on them and tried to bring them back into the fold of humanity. The primate family is not a natural species on this planet. They came by way of global catastrophes. And the primate species, after those catastrophes, were the basis of the non-African genotypes or species that are walking around now, okay? So when we look at the European, we're looking at, yes, an evolved ape. But that evolution was done through technical aspects that are recorded in indigenous records that show that our people participated in experiments in an attempt to bring them back into the fold of being human. All right? So that is the chronology I laid out in lecture number 3. If you want to get that lecture, please go to Aboriginal Medical Association and it will help. What I want to read now is something from this study, really briefly, that talks about the difference in melanin, all right? And this was published in 2004 by the American Medical Association, and it was produced also by the Department of Medicine and the Cancer Center Division of the University of Arizona, Tucson. And it states, the melanocortins include a family of peptide hormones that induce pigmentation by interaction with a melanin receptor in the skin. And it's labeled as melanocyte-stimulating hormone, all right? And it is, this is their report now. It's the primary pigmentary hormone that is released from parts of the pars intermedia of the pituitary gland in some animals and from UVB-exposed keratinocytes and melanocytes in the human skin. This 13-amino acid peptide binds to the melanin-stimulating hormone to induce cyclic AMP-mediated signal transduction, which is the energy exchange, leading to the synthesis of melanin polymers from DOPA precursors. Two types of melanin can be expressed in humans. The brownish-black pigment is called eumelanin and is believed to convey protection from the sun damage, whereas the reddish sulfur-containing pigment, pheomelanin, is often expressed in pale individuals who report poor tanning or sunburn in response to sun. Figuring out a way to attempt to clone the melanin in black people and to reintroduce it into black people and white people to see its effects, to see whether they could stop sunburn, stop the sun from burning the skin of white people. So they had a cloning mechanism. They had to clone the melanin from the black people, put it inside back inside black people's skin and see the impact, put it inside white people's skin and do the impact, and then produce the report. So this report gave all of the results, and the results came out unanimous that it was impossible to clone melanin to the point that they could stop the sun from burning up white people. Now, what that means, brothers and sisters who are not paying attention, is that white people are allergic to the sun. Let's just get that into our heads. They are allergic to the sun. The sun that gives life to everything in the universe, they are allergic to it. And some people want to classify that they are only allergic to UVA or UVB or UVC, or that they need a specific type of light, all right? So let's see if I can give that, all right? Excuse me for stopping for a moment. All right, so they're allergic to sunlight, all right? And if anybody wants to, I don't have a link. I have this in PDF form, all right, because this is a scan from a book that I got. But the title of it, it might be online, is The Effects of a Superpotent Melanotropic Peptide in Combination with Solar UV Radiation. All right. So this study, which is a part of three books that I paid over $1,500 for, is a part of a series of books that are entitled The Melanotropic Peptides, Volumes 1, 2, and 3 by Mac E. Hadley and the others. All right. So I'm taking these studies from these particular books written by white people admitting that they're allergic to the sun. All right, so what does that have to do with the Out of Africa theory? Well, let's go to it. The Out of Africa theory, as proposed by Charles Darwin and others who are around him, was destroyed by the same group of people, white folks. Now, how was it destroyed? What do you mean that it was destroyed? What I'm saying is that white people and black people do not have the same anatomies. They do not have the same physiological processes, nor do they have the same genes and genetic structure. It is completely different. Completely different. All right? Their immune systems are different. Everything about them is different. So the study that I want to offer to you is from the journal Advances in Anthropology, 2012, Volume 2. And the title is Reexamining the Out of Africa Theory and the Origin of Europeoids or Caucasoids in Light of DNA Genealogy. And it was done by Anatoly A. Klyosovich and Igor L. Rosansky from the Academy of DNA and Genealogy at Newton, Massachusetts. I believe, Newton, Massachusetts, USA. All right? If anybody wants to email the scientists and ask for this PDF, you can get it, or you can maybe I could pull a link. Most of this stuff is in PDF, so I don't have online links, but you can look up Reexamining the Out of Africa Theory, and you should be able to find this PDF. This is one that's available online. And what it simply deals with is this, that they measured the haplotypes, all right, of Africans and other races, Europeans, Asians, etc. And what they found is that something called the singular nucleopolymorphisms, all right, SNPs, were different in the European than in the African. All right? The nucleotides that were found by James Watson and Francis Crick in the European are completely different than in the African. Specifically for those who want to go through these haplogroups, all right, all non-African haplogroups do not have certain types of nucleotides. Nucleotides are the little things that you call adenine, cytosine, guanine, and thymine. When you look at or think about DNA strands that coil up into coils and then make these larger things called chromosomes, when you think about them, those little pieces inside of it, those little building blocks that make it up, are completely different. Not only are they structurally different and sequence different, but they have a different makeup, primarily because white people have more nitrogen or nitrogenous bases, and black people have carbon basis. And this is seen in the combustible nature of what is going on in the body, in the blood, and the fluids, because we have different hues, all right, which generates a different type of energy, magnetic field, etc. But these singular nuclear polymorphisms, nucleotide polymorphisms, or SNPs, that Africans have, that all non-Africans don't have, are M91, P97, M31, P82, M23, M114, P262, M32, M59, P289, P291, P102, P13, P171, and P118. All right? I'm going to read directly from this. The finding that the Europoid haplogroups did not descend from African haplogroups A or B is supported by the fact that bearers of the Europoid haplogroups, as well as all non-African haplogroups, do not carry those SNPs. And what this is simply saying is that there is no way that they could be descended from us as a people, or that we could have a common ancestor if they do not possess those same SNPs that all Africans have. All right? So what they're doing in this study, which is very, very important, is they're doing a haplotype mapping of Y chromosome haplogroups. Now, there's something very important and instructional here. If they're typing what's called the Y chromosome, which I disagree with the terminology because I don't believe, or, excuse me, I don't like to use that word. I don't subscribe to the fact, based on other European books, that what makes a male is a Y chromosome. That is what we call in science a telocentric or acrocentric break of a chromosome, which is a mutation, and therefore it does not apply. In fact, I can show you from our endocrine studies of the best European literature, which I have done in several lectures, white women with Y chromosomes. So, you know, the way that these things are taught to us are not the way that they are in the technical data. But suffice it to say this. Coming to a point. In their mapping of the male chromosome, what they found out is that the male chromosomes have no relation, absolutely no relation, to Europeans, which means that the black man is not the father of the white man or any of these other races. Absolutely not. There is no relation between them. Not only that, Rebecca Cann, in her foundational study in 1987 of mitochondrial DNA, also found that there was a class of African women who hold a specific type of mitochondrial DNA, which we'll call 20 polypeptide variants DNA, which no other women have. Seven of those polypeptides no other women share, even though they do share some of those polypeptides, specifically seven forms of them they do not share. And the proof that we are not the same species is that when these black women who carry the full polypeptide spectrum, the full genetic spectrum of what a black woman is supposed to carry, when they attempt to get pregnant by white men, they cannot get pregnant. There are a class of darker-skinned people who can get pregnant by them, but there's a specific class of people who cannot. Now, I'm saying this to say that we solved this stuff 5,000 years ago. All right? We solved this stuff 3,500 years ago. On the table or the tomb of Ramesses III, where he has posted what is titled the Table of Nations, the black people on the planet describe two different races of black people, or two different lineages. One of them was an original lineage, and one of them, they used the medical symbol, which is the staff, to describe these particular people. And that symbol of medicine was used to show that they were the result of experiment. Now, today, as of a few months ago, white folks are coming before you saying that there's two different types of haplogroups amongst Africans. All right? Two different types of haplogroups. One we would call an original, and one is a non-original. All right? But in this study, they mapped these two, and let's go through these groupings. Haplogroup A and haplogroup B. All right. So let me go to the page where I can read this. And I'm going to do a presentation on this possibly when we go to Cincinnati with our tour. All right? Let's go to this so I can read it. Give me a moment. All right. So these S&Ps that are found in haplogroup A and haplogroup B, which are black people, are not found in all of the other haplogroups. All right? So on page 5 of this particular study, it reads, and I quote, a haplogroup tree of the Y chromosome derived from base haplotypes of haplogroups and subclads are systematically calculated as described in this study. 7,415 haplogroups from 46 subclads of 17 major haplogroups, these are groups of people, have been considered for the tree design. Time scale on the vertical axis shows thousands of years from the common ancestors of haplogroups and subclads. All right? So what they're simply saying is that the original haplogroups are dated to now over 300,000 years old. And the sub-haplogroups all fall within a period that does not exceed 60,000 years. So what does that say? When Brother Ali goes and says that the Lake Toba catastrophe gave rise to sulfur-based anatomies, and it happened, you can look it up, Lake Toba catastrophe, all right? The Lake Toba catastrophe occurred approximately 65,000 to 70,000 years ago, all right? The sulfur-based anatomies came from that release of sulfur aerosol in that part of the planet. And not coincidentally, you have the rhesus monkey developing in that part of the planet as well. Not to mention that the Ramayana and the Mahabharata, which are texts, Vedic texts from the Krishna people, the blacks who were in that part of the planet, discusses these animals losing their form, and they have a specific name from them called Vanara. So if these texts are only a few thousand years old, and they discuss the Vanara, which were the ape-like creatures, how is it that indigenous texts can match modern science and our people not see that these people are not related to us? They are descended from hominidal apes. All right? So the whole concept of apes developing and then evolving into humans in Africa is ridiculous. There's nothing in African history that talks about that or African tradition. And the common or the modern data does not support it. The media and the eugenicists are the ones who support this theory because their end game is to get you to believe that you are related to animals and that evolution took place. And if natural selection is true, then natural selection says survival of the fittest and adaptation for the best breed. And if white people came last, that means in natural selection they're the best. This is what type of programming is being given to us, both consciously and subconsciously. So now if white people are coming and saying the S&Ps don't match, then they come and say that they have a sulfur-based anatomy, then they come further and say that the rhesus monkey has a sulfur-based neural synapse operation in his brain and body, and both have antigenic blood, why are you arguing with Ali Muhammad? Why are you arguing with Ali Muhammad? All right? So if we're going to have this discussion, then let's have the discussion based on real premises. Because if Darwinism is proposing that we came from monkeys and then we don't match the anatomy of these monkeys, then, you know, that's a problem. All right. So why is it that I came to the issue of the Human Genome Project in this whole discussion? The issue of the Human Genome Project was brought into this discussion to discuss the fact that in order to try to type genes, all of the scientists came up with the methodologies, developed the typing of genes in molecular biology by using cloning mechanisms from viruses. All right? Cloning mechanisms for viruses. Just to name a few people, I already named James Watson. Max Delbruck was a part of a group, along with James Watson, who was one of the founders of modern DNA, called the phage group. And the phage group is named after bacteriophage, and bacteriophage is basically viruses. So in his book, DNA, The Secret of Life, James Watson proposes in that particular material the methodologies that were used by himself and other molecular biologists and geneticists in studying human DNA. And in order to study human DNA, something called complementary DNA had to be developed. What is complementary DNA? Complementary DNA is the use of viruses and dead human cells in vitro in a petri dish and allowing the viruses to clone the DNA or attempt to clone the DNA through a process, what's called reverse transcriptase, to clone the DNA in order to be used in reintroduction into the body for some particular purpose. Today, primarily, it's used for what's called recombinant DNA technologies. And recombinant DNA technologies are what allow for scientists to say, we can describe your physiology or what goes on in the body. We can describe melanin-stimulating hormone processes, how it leaves the pituitary gland and goes into the medium eminence and into the bloodstream. We can do this because we insert viruses into a living organism and measure what is going on through a process called FISH. FISH represents the term fluorescence in situ hybridization. All right. And when all of your modern studies in anatomy and physiology are based on FISH, fluorescence in situ hybridization, which is a technique in which scientists of today's world will clone viruses in order to track how those viruses will move throughout a body in order to get a better understanding of physiological processes using mice and frogs and other animals to understand what is going on in the human body. They have cultivated specific types of spores, yeast, and funguses to carry out these particular activities. And in studying in vitro, which is in test tubes or in petri dishes, the biology of spores, yeast, and funguses, they have been able to understand their anatomy because they are walking spores, yeast, and funguses. So most of what we have from the Human Genome Project is very successful for white people, because if we go back to our beginning premise, the anatomies are heterotrophic. Now, to give you a further example of what I mean by this, the inability to use bacteriophage and recombinant DNA technology, the inability to use it effectively to copy the gene sequences of black people or aboriginal people, African people, is expressed in the same study that I just read from. And in that study, the object was to attempt to clone the melanin cortins or the melanin polypeptides of black people in order to reintroduce them to white people in certain parts of the body. And in reintroducing them to white people, they were hoping that they could successfully allow for those melanotropic peptides or those cloned melanins to assist white people at stopping the process of the development of sunburn cells. What this study, which is entitled The Effects of the Superpotent Melanotropic Peptide, what it proves is that they were unable to successfully do so, simply because the cloning of the melanin from the black body was not complete. All right? Now, for those of you who studied bioanatomy, there's a reason why it is not complete, and it's related directly to the chemistry of original melanin versus the cloning processes. In the cloning processes, there is a need to use ammonium-based particles. All right. Ammonium-based particles are particles that are synthesized into biologies via funguses, yeast, spores, and heterotrophs. All right. So, what are we saying here? What we are saying here is that when Europeans are attempting to read anatomy, physiology, etc., they are using processes that we call today recombination, which is the technique of taking viruses and allowing viral restructuring of natural in vivo live cells, genes, DNA. And what we are proposing here is that it works much more effectively for them in their own anatomies as opposed to ours, which is proved in this melanin study. All right. One of the things that's also done is that they have to, when they want to take a set of genes out of somebody and see what they look like, all right, they have to use a specific type of spore, which they term an enzyme. One of these particular types of enzyme is called REC-A enzyme. REC-A enzyme is Escherichia coli, also known as E. coli. E. coli is one of the most important in vitro enzymic cutters because when introduced into biology, it will cut the DNA nucleotides at certain points. Why is it cutting it at certain points? Because it is the nature of heterotrophs to attack the hydrogen and the oxygen bonding in natural DNA. So they use E. coli and other types of double-strand breaking mechanisms to go into a cell and take pieces out. So what does that look like? The Human Genome Project, all right, let's talk about it so we can get some understanding, was made to type what is considered about 25,000 genes in the human genome. And in doing so, they use these particular cloning processes to type these particular genes by inserting viruses, cloning them, and then reproducing them so that they can see the structure and the nucleotide sequences, the A, C, T, G. So they want to see those things. So they have to use cloning to do this. But in the process of cloning, they can only clone one type of chromosome or chromatin or DNA, and that is called U-chromatin. U-chromatin. All right. Not only that, there's another type of DNA that they cannot clone, and it's called heterochromatin. That was not included inside of the Human Genome Project. Now, why am I saying that we need to debunk this? What I'm saying is that the Human Genome Project was only made for commercialization of the unwell-founded information that they would come up with so that they could give you what is called specific medicine, genome-specific medicine. There's a company called Celera that competed with the National Institute of Health, which is a government-funded organization. Celera competed with them because they wanted the commercial benefits of dealing with sequencing the human genome. So now what is happening is companies like Celera and other companies are telling you that in order for them or the future of medicine and treatment is that they want to type your genome and tell you what genetic proclivity that you have for disease so you can begin the treatment before the manifestation of that particular disease in your life cycle. So the idea is we're going to sell you drugs before the problem that we know is there manifests. We're going to sell you drugs. So, once again, the end game is completely ignorant populations who do not understand that they have not even typed the real gene sequence, nor can they type the Aboriginal gene sequence properly because they can't make a good copy. I was commenting on something that Self Kingdom asked me because he thought the data was pretty tight for the Human Genome Project, and I use this example. Think about this in terms of a copier, all right? If I have a color piece of a color document that I want to copy, and I don't have a color printer, and I use a black and white printer, that means I'm going to lose some of the imaging. I'm not going to be able to see everything in its original context. Make that a little bit worse, say I had a color copier where the toner was low, where not only do I get it in black and white, but I get it spotted. This is how complementary DNA used by viruses in recombinant DNA technology, this is a semblance of the mechanism that occurs. And how we know that it's a fact that it occurs that way is because if they could perfectly clone and then take diagnostics on genes, then they could clone your melanin, insert it into a white person, and ultimately turn them into you. That would mean that they could reproduce the S&P that I said that they don't have in all white people and give it to them synthetically through cloning and recombinant DNA technologies and allow for them to have a synthesis with the sun. They could change the hair texture by giving them the endogenous copper, tyrosine-based copper, in the nucleosome. They could turn white people black. It can't happen, brothers and sisters. No cloning mechanisms on this planet are going to allow for white people to fix what they have become. All right? There are none. So all we're saying is that their studies themselves, the study that I just mentioned, which was an attempt to reduce the allergic reaction of white people to the sun, that particular study proved that they could not, at this particular point, carry out that particular mechanism. So what is the point? My point is this. All of our people who are going to get antibiotics, going to get treatments from European institutions with the thought that they are heading off some disease that they have acquired because of a lack of knowledge of how to take care of their genomes are now the commercial serfs of the European medical industry. And with having confidence in the Human Genome Project as a legitimate project that can type the human genome, what we don't realize is that the only genome that is being typed is the genome of the heterotroph or the walking fungus amongst us, the white man and the white woman. Your genome has not been properly typed. What has occurred is they have been able to see through some of their mechanisms that there are variances that are of very significant character between the original races on this planet and the hybrid races. And with that being said, if they cannot accomplish this through the Human Genome Project, in fact, they have not been able to even type certain types of chromosomes, then we have to ask some other questions. Here are the questions that we ask, and we're going to give you immediate answers. First question. Have white people ever seen living chromosomes? Have white people ever seen living chromosomes? The emphatic answer to that question is no. They have never seen living chromosomes. I'm going to give you my source. In our Volume 2 lecture that we did at Black and Nobel, I gave the source out. The book is called Adam's Curse, all right? And it was written by a biogeneticist named Brian Sykes. And in that particular book, I'm going to read a direct quote from it so that you can get what I'm saying. Give me a moment so I can open up this presentation that I have it in. In that particular book, Brian Sykes makes a few points. As a biogeneticist, not as a commoner speaking about stuff on the street, all right, as a biogeneticist, and I want to quote him on these particular points. And then I'm going to go back because I'm actually just kind of opening up so I can cite my sources. I see some people beating up on me. Brother, you're not citing your sources. I'm mentioning these articles, but I'm going to come back to give the specific sources from a PowerPoint presentation. All right. Let me come to Mr. Sykes. Give me a moment. Here we go. All right. This book called Adam's Curse was written because Sykes, based on his analysis, is saying that the Y chromosome is degenerating and it's causing infertility and ultimately will cause collapse. Now, he didn't say a specific race, but we can, based on our own knowledge of the fact that black men have no fertility issues going on, the healthy black men on this planet, and that white men are bottoming out, that he is specifically talking about the white people, white folks. But here's something that he says about chromosomes. All right? There's no technology on Earth available now for white people to see chromatin, which is chromosomes when it's in the cell, or chromosomes when they are living. Those things have to be extracted outside of the body and placed in a petri dish to see. So there's no white scientist that's ever seen a living in vivo chromosome. And I'm going to take from the best amongst them to prove this to you. On page 48 of his book, Adam's Curse, Sykes says this: since chromosomes are really only visible through a microscope when they are condensed just before cells divide, it was hard to find enough cells anywhere in human tissues to do even the crudest of counts. The only tissue that plenty of dividing cells was to be found in is the testicles, whose constantly busy cells face the task of producing over 150 million sperm. All right? He goes on to state on page 21 of that same book, unlike red blood cells, the white blood cells have held onto their chromosomes. However, they, the chromosomes, are invisible except for a few hours surrounding the moment of cell division in vitro, when they appear briefly, once again melting into the background of the cell. So he's saying when you take white blood cells out, because they do have nucleuses and chromosomes, when they're in a petri dish and they're splitting, for a moment you can get a look at the chromosomes. But this is when they are outside of the body, and we have identified white blood cells as an unnatural part of the human anatomy, the natural human anatomy, and as a natural part of white people's anatomy. All right, so two quotes from a current biogeneticist who is in a lab constantly studying chromosomes is telling you that they have never seen living chromosomes. And they have no technology on the planet that they are bringing to the surface, at least, to see chromosomes. So how do white people get to be experts on chromosomes? Since they can only see them when they are outside, in vitro, and exposed to certain things to either keep them mitotically dividing or they're dead. The only thing that can happen is cloning and sequencing to see some variation by using viruses. All right? So in the study of anatomy and physiology on this planet right now, there are no European institutions that can offer you a living example of how the black body operates. Nowhere on the planet. That's my point I wanted to make. This is their scientists telling you that. And they're also telling you the only way they can attempt is by using spores, funguses, and viruses to attempt to clone what is there to get a look at it. All right. So what do we propose that is different? We propose that cellular mitosis as a biological function is not a function of the black body. I proposed this when I first came up with the biocosmology model, and it is a fact that can be proven that a healthy black body that is eating plants will never go through mitotic division of the cells. Mitotic division is the cell splitting and the chromosome splitting, causing acrocentric breaks in the heterochromatin. The heterochromatin is the original chromatin, or part of the chromosomes, the telomeres and the centromeres in a cell. And when they break, this is when you get mutations, and this is when you get breaks in the normal anatomy of the human being. Our bodies, when they are in their healthy state, eating plant-based foods, will perpetually produce cells that are immortal, literally, which means that they will not age. And in not aging, we could get someone who's 100 years old who looks like they are 25. I have been on a fast for the last 15 days, eating only fruit. I dropped 12 pounds, and anybody who sees me now can see my skin and my body glowing, literally. So I know just in that short time period, and I've done different types of fasts before, but I wanted to do this type of fast because I wanted to prove to myself, based on studying the literature from both our history and past and some of the literature that people like Dr. Sabi study from. I mentioned this, people beat me up online because I brought out Arnold Eric's books and showed that Dr. Sabi did not found the mucus disease concept, that he got it directly from Arnold Eric. All right, and Arnold Eric was a white man who attempted to live by our ancient dietary paradigm, all right, who was killed for doing so. But he came up with the mucusless diet system, and that the only disease in the body is mucus. That is his teaching, which is wrong, actually, but that's his teaching. But my point is that when you are eating fruit, you are eating carbon, hydrogen, and oxygen, which is the quintessential fuel for the body, which will build melanosomes, carbon polymers, melanocytes, strong, healthy blood, all right? Because the carbohydrates are the most natural food on the planet. And it will end any level of mitotic division. Mitotic division is catalyzed by you eating highly albumin-based foods, protein-based foods, nitrogenous-based foods that heighten the ammonia in your body. And heighten the ammonia in your body, you heighten the amount of white adipose tissue. You heighten from those spore-based white adipose fats, white blood cells. You heighten the spores eating at the red blood cells and the other tissues. We heighten the death of cells, and this is where mitosis comes in, because mitosis is a survival factor for a cell attempting to stay alive because it does not have the correct nutrients, correct minerals, and correct magnetic energy in the field sequences to stay alive. So when we learned in our lessons, and we are asked the question about the making of the devil, and we are taught that grafting means separating the germs here are chromosomes, and chromosome splitting cause the destruction of melanin. So we have it there in our Supreme Wisdom lessons where in question 31, I believe it is, where we are discussing how Yaqub grafted the devil symbolically, and then the introduction of the term separating the germs is used to give us a 101 in aboriginal anatomy and physiology. All right, so cellular mitosis as a biological process that you all go to school and learn is the normal process, you are downloading a unnatural way for the body to operate. What we propose is what we call hemopoietic regeneration, which is the regeneration of the body based on the cells being healthy, the mitochondria being clean, and there being no nitrogenous or ammonia-based substances introduced into the body to cause cellular degradation. That is what the black body does. So now when we look at our diets and we are proposing different diets for people, what they don't understand is that we are of clear knowledge of the best processes for the black body. Not only that, there's a psychosomatic underpinning. Because just like we use the words divide and conquer is a biological reality. So when we eat the diets that are outside of that which matches our genetics, then we enjoin the proclivity to be more devilish, literally. Being devilish has a biological basis to it. People who eat shit act like shit, literally. All right? So, in this sense, Brian Sykes, from that one particular proposal, offers us the fact that when we are looking at the Human Genome Project, we are looking at the attempt to type what is called U-chromatin. U-chromatin, all right, is a type of chromatin, chromatin meaning chromosomes, that is predominant in the European races. Heterochromatin has never been sequenced, never been typed, which means that when we look at the chromosomes amongst black people, because of the processes that we have laid out tonight, you have never been addressed in the Human Genome Project. What is happening is you are being hacked. You are being hacked through the diet. You are being hacked through the false pharmaceutical industry. We are being hacked through the synthetic chemical industry of soaps and other things. So now what is the resolution? What is the resolution? If we are not the same species, Brother Ali, what are you communicating? I'm communicating that at every point we need to address the issues of this biomedical warfare and have a solution. Why is it that we don't want to take vaccines? The reason why we don't want to take vaccines is because they are introducing baby tissues into the vaccines. You are being turned into a cannibal. They are colonizing monkeys on the islands of Barbados and other places. GlaxoSmithKline Beachins and the pharmaceutical industries are doing this and creating vaccines that have cancerous tissues in it, baby parts, kidney cell lines from monkeys, with the thought and idea that you're going to raise your immunity. And all you're going to do is raise your white blood cell count, which is raising your ability to destroy all your natural tissues. One of the things that we highlighted tonight is that black people have a humoral-based immunity, which is immunity based on the electrical nature of the brain and based on the lymphatic system and the blood and the electrical state and flow of both of them. So when they are on a fruit and plant-based diet, they keep that immune system, humoral immune system, in order where they can release hormones from their brain to destroy anything that comes into their body that is off of the electrical and magnetic frequency states that all the other tissues are on. All right. Understanding this will allow us, anybody who's studying any information that we put out, why in biocosmology we say all disease is based on an energetic imbalance. If you come to me and you say you have diabetes and you have the cells of a system, the endocrine system, and an organ destabilized, I know that not only is the system destabilized and the cells of the pancreas destabilized, but I know that the nucleotides, the molecules, the atom, the very coherent force in that organ is off base, and that is because you have a thought in your mind that you can eat cheese pizza with no consequences. So everything goes back to a behavioral dynamic that has been downloaded or taught to you that is against your anatomy and physiology, and without an institution to teach you about that anatomy and physiology, we make the wrong choice. And then we have children and spread weak chromosomes down into newer generations, and we're wondering why our children have on skinny jeans. We're wondering why each generation is getting weaker, because we are practicing a counterculture that is mandating that the morphology of the body follows what the director of the body is telling it to do, which is weaken itself. And all of this is a product of eugenics. So without a governing system, a set of institutions that are shareable amongst original people, we are left out to dry. Tomorrow, somebody is going to go get that vaccine. When the school year starts, our people are going to be running to get the vaccines. Do we think that we're going to continue this generationally and then not suffer the consequences? And for those of us who know better, what is it that's stopping you from allying with your brothers and sisters who know better so that you can commercially, economically, politically, socially, health-wise, mentally, psychosomatically get up out of this situation? What is keeping you sedentary? What's keeping you sedentary is that you don't know the mechanisms to unlock your sedentary nature. And a part of it is us educating you about your body so you can make some changes to unlock the things that are required for you to work together. It is not in the nature of spores to work together. It is in the nature of spores to compete against one another and to devour and eat each other. And this is what is happening in your communities as we are following the cannibals. Healthy cells cooperate with one another in organized systems for the sustenance of the body's constitution. And healthy people work together in order to sustain their families and communities based on our systems of law and not opinion. So we could introduce a whole other cultural dynamic, and I guarantee you 90% of the people who say that they're conscious will be against it because they're not really aware. Maybe they watched some YouTubes. Maybe they read some Elijah Muhammad books. Maybe they studied some lessons for a little while. But they have not absorbed it into a workable format on a daily basis so that they can understand what it means to live a culture and a tradition, which means that they are full of shit. They are clones. Regardless of how patient you want to be with it, it doesn't matter. They are savage clones that need civilization. And if they are not going to be given civilization, what are you going to offer them? Arguments on Facebook? Arguments on Twitter? So black people have put it inside of their mind that they're invincible somewhere and that, you know, they could be outside of the best guidance and still be some kind of way successful. But that isn't happening. That's not what's happening. What's happening is you're being turned into a spiritual cannibal and a physical cannibal. What's happening is your children are going to get shot with primary rabbit kidney in a vaccine next year because you're sending them off to public school because you're living in a monogamous trap where you don't have the resources so that you can either homeschool or start your own school because your woman is following after the devil, going to their institutions, getting credentialed and certified, and then coming back to argue with you about science and life. So what part of the game is that, black man? What part of the game is that? Do I have to spend all night with this bullshit technical jargon in order to get you to understand that white folks are lying to you? And the evidence is in your life, period? Where are your resources? Where is your wealth? If you don't have it and you want it and you can't get it, that means you don't know how to get it? Or you're not implementing the mechanisms to get it? So the Human Genome Project is just about grafting you in out of your original self. That is the Yacoubian Project. The Yacoubian Eugenics Project, labeled the Human Genome Project, and all it's going to do is make GlaxoSmithKline Beecham and other pharmaceutical industries richer because now they're going to cater to you and say, we need to know your specific genome sequence so we can really help you. Meanwhile, they're writing in their literature, they can't even clone your genomic sequences to tell everything that's in it in order to help you. So when they bring this 25,000 genome catalog project to you, they just catalog their own body and see all their problems, and they're busy trying to snatch stuff out of your body to take it into their body. Nothing but a cannibal. We have brothers who are trying to argue against the science that me and Minister Inkey are bringing on this genetic tour. All we're doing is throwing these white folks' theories right back in your face. They're all theories.
Why is it that the Table of Nations of Ramesses III does not hold more weight than a Russian experiment that is proven the same thing that we proved 3,500 years ago? Why is it that I can go to the tombs of Akhet Aten and pull off the steles, Marie Aten, with a ankh to her nose, showing that we knew the gonadotropin-releasing hormone cycle 3,500 years ago? For those of you who don't know what that is, the gonadotropin-releasing hormone cycle is what makes you a man or a woman. As specific hormones are released based on ions taken in from the magnetic field into your bloodstream through an object that is called the circle of Willis, which is shaped just like an ankh. Meaning 3,500 years ago, someone had opened up the head, seen the organ, knew its processing, and knew its connection to the Earth's geomagnetic field in the production of life, energy in the body, and the determination of the sexes. 3,500 years ago, but you arguing about me about modern technology. The National Institute of Health says to this very day they do not know where the initiation of the gonadotropin-releasing hormone cycle starts. We took a 3,500-year-old text and showed that it starts in the nose and migrates up into the hypothalamus gland, into the pituitary, into your bloodstream. We showed in our presentations that white folks have learned how to increase aromatase-producing foods like soy and other things to turn you into a faggot. To create a false hormone called estrogen in the body of black women to make them more susceptible. So all we're saying is that we have been doing this tour for the whole of black America. We've been taking time out of our schedule, taking our time out of our lives and our research and our daily work to go to New York, to go to D.C., Philadelphia, going to Cincinnati, Cleveland, L.A. And on April 27th and April 28th, all right, down south, to go to all of these places so that we can share with our people the best of modern science and a whole new paradigm. Hopefully, you will take it and do something with it, and take the guidance and make it something that is usable by you. Okay. All right. So what I wanted to do is go back and backtrack just a little bit, and give you some sources on this Lake Toba catastrophe, because I talked about it and I didn't give the sources out, and I don't want people to beat me up. All right. One of the things that is proven in indigenous records is that there were several what is called geomagnetic pole shifts that caused extinction-level events on this planet. I mentioned one in the Lake Toba catastrophe. The book, The Geomagnetic Field and Light by Apri Dubrov, lists on page 79 that biological catastrophes depend primarily on a change in polarity and strength of the geomagnetic field and to a lesser extent on climatic changes. All right? So that's page 79 of The Geomagnetic Field in Life. Why am I mentioning that? Because we can describe the processes by which these hominids got here. This is what other groups want to argue with us about, whether they be black or white. Primates are not natural animals to this planet. I don't care how many Zachariah Sitchin books that you read. It doesn't matter. I don't care how many Dr. York books you read. The real records of the Atrahasis and the indigenous records do not agree with Zachariah Sitchin, Dr. York, and these quacks. They describe real biological processes that are measurable today scientifically and are written in indigenous records. So if the people of Hindu Kush say that the Vanara were eight people who they interface with, why are we theorizing about where hominids came from when they say it was geological cataclysms that brought about the creation of mankind? Your own Bible is very clear in the first six verses that it was not the creation of the heavens and the earth and the whole universe that was taking place. It was the refurbishing of a planet that had suffered catastrophes, making new canals, fresh water systems, and cleaning up areas that have been decimated due to global catastrophe. So when you hear Zachariah Sitchin saying they wanted to make a primitive worker in order to be a slave, what they did is they took the hominids and attempted to reform them, and they did make them a slave population to carry out works in cleaning up a planet, parts of which that have been decimated by catastrophe. That's not so far out to understand. When Hiroshima and Nagasaki was hit by atomic bombs, the Japanese had to go and refurbish their whole island. So if this happened in ancient history, it's not something that's far beyond one's comprehension that it could happen 5,000 years ago, 10,000 years ago, that it could happen 50 years ago. Human beings have had access to certain type of technology, and they have used it to destroy. And it has affected certain groups of people. The technologies in the past just happen to be much greater, all right? So in the Lake Toba catastrophe, there is what's called volcanic explosivity index. What I'm doing is trying to debunk this out of Africa theory. The theory is whack. The reality of what happened is you had different types of original people who devolved down into hominids based on global catastrophes, and the reality is that we had some type of experimentation to bring them back, most of which I'll have to wait to a lecture that we do to explain, because it takes time to build you up to even understand the mechanism by which these things occur. What would one have to do to change a hominidal ape into a white man? What would they have to be offered? How do you stop the hair from growing in certain places? What type of plant-based alkaloids or things do you have to introduce to deal with changing the morphology, all right? But in light of that, we do know what changed the morphology in the beginning, and it was the Lake Toba catastrophe. On the volcanic explosivity index, which is called VEI, which goes from 0 to 8, the Lake Toba volcanic catastrophe is labeled as 8 and was considered the largest earth catastrophe ever known. All right? Go down to the next slide so I can give you a quote. The Lake Toba study is from the Journal of Human Evolution, Volume 45, and it's called The Super Eruption of Toba, Did It Cause a Human Bottleneck? By F.J. Gaythorne Hardy and W.E.H. Harcourt Smith. The Lake Toba catastrophe, I'm going to read about this release of sulfur aerosols into the atmosphere. The super eruption of the Toba catastrophe has been closely linked to a peak in sulfur aerosols in the GISP ice core. So this is the testing ice cores and measuring the amount of sulfur that was left at any geological point. And it has been proposed that the impact on the world's climate caused the eruption of Toba, which is that volcano. Ice core data show that the weather was cooler for several centuries. So now the cooling of the planet at that particular time caused the organisms to change. So plants change structure and the beings change structure. All right, cooler for several centuries after the Toba eruption, possibly due to the large amount of stratospheric sulfur aerosol ejected by the volcano. Don't you know right now white people are proposing methodologies to block out the sun because it's getting too hot on the planet? Pastor Farhad Muhammad was the first one to talk about this in the 99 Actual Facts, which is a plus degree to our lessons, where he said that Europeans poisoned the atmosphere 3 cubic feet per minute. And what is that describing? That is describing the fact that white people do not breathe and take in and process the same gases that we do and have a different physiological process, even though we both have lungs. Their intake of nitrogen and chemical affinity for it is higher because they are nitrogen fixators. Nitrogen fixators are spore-based organisms, heterotrophs, that take in nitrogen and produce high levels of ammonia. So while you're breathing high levels of oxygen, they're breathing high levels of nitrogen. And the nitrogen is pinpointed in history as a noxious gas and did not exist on this planet until we had what is called the lunar Mars-Venus catastrophe, which we call the deportation of the moon. According to indigenous records, it happened 66 SARs ago, or approximately 250,000 years. The 66 trillion is what I call an encryption that was given by Master Far Muhammad. But we do know that the lunar Mars Venus catastrophe occurred because the evidence is on Mars, on the Earth, and on Venus. It's a part of the oral tradition, and it's a part of the written tradition of the Xi, the people that you call the Olmec. It's a part of the written tradition in the Sumerian Kings List, and the Atrahasis, and the Numa Elish. It's a part of global indigenous records that a catastrophe happened. The Jubwe glyph amongst the Olmecs proved the fact that Venus was called the great cataclysm bringer. And they depicted Venus as a moon of Jupiter. Jupiter in the Babylonian script was called Nibiru. These things happen. Mars, on Mars, there is evidence of a catastrophe and a pole shift. The Mars Global Surveyor in 2001 brought back the images. The JPL produced them showing that there was a civilization on Mars and that potentially there is still one that lives underground because they have tubing to bring air and irrigation underground. There's water on Mars. We're not trying to spook you out. We're trying to synthesize history so you can understand where you're at and what happened on this earth and where you're going. White people want to block out the sun because they are in what's called a nitrogen reduction cycle. And in the nitrogen reduction cycle, the temperature on the earth is going up, global warming. And when the temperature goes up, spores, yeast, and fungus don't like it because their time is up. We even went so far as to write a book called Star Prophecy, which we're going to release in June, or maybe a little earlier when I do this press conference. And in writing the book, we showed that the Dogon teaching that the sun used to have a twin and that one day that star would return, that star is now in our system. We discovered in 2011 that we live in a binary system right now and that the temperature on the earth is going to go up. So this is what global warming is all about. And then when you see white people with projects to put sulfur-based aerosols in the sky to block out the sun, what the hell do you think is going on this planet? Don't you think that they know that these people who wrote these records in ancient times were accurate? Meanwhile, we throw them away to get a degree from a dumbass institution that's going to clip your community's wings. All right, where am I right now? I'm all over the place, right? I'm not even checking the chat. All right. All right. So somebody's asking me about a brother from South Carolina that the white people are producing. It's just proving that black people are older and older. All right. So all I'm saying and all we are purporting is that we need a better synthesized study. We need a better synthesized study. And in doing our studies and looking at the things that we consider to be normal in science, we have to have people who are in institutions to review this literature. How many times have we had people to sit down and go over the entire processing and sequencing of the Human Genome Project to see if it's a legitimate and sound process as if they as they have proposed it? All right? And if they have, where are their published papers on that? We created the Aboriginal Medical Association to do that. All right. I see I got a crazy person on the chat. All right. So let's boot them out. because they're giving us some problems. If you want to call in, you can call in and ask a question in a civilized manner. But get him out of here. All right, so our discussion tonight was very simple. The Out of Africa theory is bogus. The last study that I pulled up from the Russians that discusses this particular theory states that none of the S&Ps of haplogroup A match any of the European S&Ps, which means that we have a completely different genome. As Bill Clinton tried to say, we're 99% the same. We're not 99% the same. All right? There is a complete difference. The proof that we gave earlier, for those of you who came on late, is that when you take a black woman specifically and you try to impregnate her, a black woman that has the full mitochondrial polypeptide sequence, which is a 13 plus 7, a 20 peptide sequence, when you try to impregnate her with the sperm of any other man on the planet, she is allergic to it. So much so that she would develop erythroblastosis. Erythroblastosis is a process by which her humoral immune system is now signaling that that sperm is foreign to her body. And if she wants to take that in, she has to take a drug called Rogam to change her immunity altogether, to synthetically produce a child. Now, there are some black women who are able to produce children by white males without that, and those are your other classes of women. Because we have went over the African line once and over again in the lectures that we have and discuss on. I know we're going to have a lot of questions tonight, so I'm going to open up the chat so we can get some of those questions in and allow you to ask your questions. Our call-in number tonight is 646-381-4991. We are discussing tonight the Human Genome Project, all right, which was proposed by the National Institute of Health and the U.S. Department of Energy, headed first by James Watson, who we went over his history and his books and his statements about people of African descent being unintelligent and him being fired from a university project because of that, him being one of the most renowned geneticists amongst Europeans because of his work with Francis Crick and the study and the finding of the DNA helix, all right? And in looking at the Human Genome Project, looking at the methods by which are you used to type genomic sequences, and even all the current models of European medicine being based on the study of heterotrophs, viruses, and the fact that these viruses are used to clone material and they are not cloning them in an accurate format or a complete format shows us that the commercial objective of these people is not to get accurate technologies over to us to change anything. Because if that were the case, then we would have a genetic-specific oriented medicine where it's already known the side effects and the deprivation that the pharmacology is having on the African-American population. There's so many studies on this, I don't have to mention it, and we can look. We're living testimonies of it. And as for the Out of Africa theory, it was proposed by Charles Darwin, who, along with his cousin, was working a eugenics phenomena. And the purpose of that phenomena was to declassify any of the prior records about the evolution of human beings and to use natural selection as a conceptual framework that it has more social context than scientific context. All right? The idea of adaptability is understood. That is natural. But the idea of socializing in institutions to break the adaptability of people through self-control evolution is a whole nother level that is not being addressed. I am not going to sit here and argue with black people about evolution. You can have your opinions about that. There are a lot of things that we still don't know because we still have to do research. But we cannot sidestep the fact that we don't know those things and throw all of our coins into a European basket and expect that there's not some underlying end game that they want to achieve some commercial or other type of apparent authority over us, because that is their end game. All right. So if we don't have institutions that have read books, The Descent of Man, looked at Francis Crick's work, DNA, The Secret of Life, and all of his material, I often get it where black people are commenting on things that they have done no research on, have no specialization on, never questioned the original teachers, never questioned the white folks when they brought it. But as soon as a brother, they want to, you know, raise all kind of illegitimate questions, the scientific questions are legitimate, and we're going to take some of those. So we're going to open up the lines now so we can take some questions. See if I can open up this line. Call in from 678-545. You on Aboriginal Radio. Peace. 678-545. You are on Aboriginal Radio. And please turn down your radio a little bit because you got an echo.
Yes, sir. Assalamu alaikum, brother.
Alaykum salam. How are you, sir?
Hey, I got a question, brother. Man, I'm enjoying the show. But then I applaud you for your fast that you're on. You know, you eat them organic vegetables, man. I'm around the glowing like a bulb. But, you was mentioning, I know the Master Farah Muhammad was telling the believers in the Supreme Wisdom that, you know, Yaqub or the tribe of Shabazz, you know what I'm saying, they was a different people away from, you know what I'm saying, the original black people. You know, it was a discussion to go and make these people down in southern Africa to conquer, you know what I'm saying, the jungles of Africa. Now, when you talk about there's two different types of black people, are you talking about that tribe of people that was created 50,000 years ago?
Well,
beloved.
I'm not specifically addressing that, but we could interject that and discuss that. Master Farah Muhammad proposed to us that a group of our people moved into Africa, which at that time was an uninhabited place. Now, in order to address that particular thing, we would have to get more knowledge about the earth. A lot of the problems stem from, again, old theories that are proposed to us that that are out of date. Like, for instance, and I hate to go this way, but I have to go this way. We are taught in general school about Pangaea when all the continents were together. Have you ever heard of that theory?
Pangaea when all the continents were together.
Yeah. All right.
Absolutely.
So now.
Yeah.
All right.
You know,
so now the problem
with, or something like that.
Yeah, yeah. The problem with that is that Europeans have now debunked their own theory of Pangaea. The theory of Pangaea was that at one time, or at the beginning, all the continents were together. What they are proposing now is that Pangaea is the result of some type of cataclysm. And the reason why they are proposing that is because as they look at other planets, what they are finding is that tectonic plates are not a natural feature of a planet. So when we backdrop and we go back to the Honorable Elijah Muhammad and discussion on the deportation of the moon, before we even got down to 50,000 years ago, he talked about this first earth catastrophe that gave us our current earth. Now, how we know that in indigenous records it has some legitimacy is because the Dogon have the exact same history where they discuss the making of the current earth and what they call the descent of Ogo. The descent of Ogo talks about how the earth was cleaved apart at an ancient point in history. But I'm only introducing that to say that the current geography that we have is a new geography on the planet. So when we look at the discussion of Shabazz, as we read it specifically from Message to the Black Man, the Honorable Elijah Muhammad calls Africa East Asia. All right? And he says that Shabazz went into East Asia. Right? So
yeah.
Now, at the earth, either Shabazz was on the other side of the Atlantic Ocean, or the geography was different just based on that statement, because if Shabazz was in Mecca, Africa is west of Mecca. Follow me?
Yeah.
You got to go back and look at these statements and reevaluate them. My next point is that when we get the discussion on the tribe of Shabazz, the first thing that we should do is consult original literature. The word Shabazz comes from the Asiatic area, and it is associated with a specific bird. All right? So the Shabazz bird is a falcon bird in the Eastern Asiatic philosophies. And when you look for the word Shabazz, you find it in places like Pakistan, in places like Iran, etc. That same symbolism became what's called the double-headed eagle of Lagash, which is a place in Sumer, and it also became the iconography of the tribes of Heru. I'm mentioning this because in African history, you have two lineages, the tribes of Heru and the tribes of Set, who constantly battled each other, but they were both black races.
Okay.
Right?
Okay.
So now what you have in history is
what
that
color pigment?
Hold on. The discussion of the tribes of Heru from different Egyptologists is that they came from another location outside of Africa into Africa. Some people disagree with that. Some people agree with that. So as we are looking at the teachings of the Honorable Elijah Muhammad, my point is we have to put it in comparison to real history and ancient history and documentation, African folklore, African mythology, African literary documentary sources, and then we can make a synthesis. My synthesis is this, that the concept of the tribe of Shabazz is a legitimate concept, but it was delivered in the tradition of African folklore. When the Africans or black people of this planet put something in folklore, it's not exactly as it is in folklore as it is in a real story. For instance,
okay,
you have the story
of Osiris. Which was my next question.
Hold on. You have the story of Osiris being chopped up into 14 pieces, all right,
okay,
or being thrown into the Nile, and his wife and her sister saving them so that they could produce a son. Everybody knows that a dead man wasn't pulled out of the Nile, but there's something significant about the mythos that is there. So when we look at the Yacoubian history that we are given and the Shabazz history that we're given, this is in the tradition of African folklore. When we mature up into science, we have to give a different expression to it. So I do agree that the concept of two lines are there because it matches modern science and matches the indigenous record, et cetera. But the explanation of it, we have to, you know, look at it. But go ahead to your next question.
Okay. Because I've heard you mention in your explanation of of advanced interpretation of how the Caucasian race came about, you know, and you mentioned that, you know, when we was told us in message to the black man, it was told us kind of like in a folklore or maybe story tale type, you know what I'm saying, setting to feed babies, you know what I'm saying?
Exactly.
Because what your explanation of how white folks got here is really advanced, and it's kind of taken aback, you know what I'm saying? You know what I'm saying? For those who would look at it from the way that the Honorable Elijah Muhammad fed it to us, which was, Yaqub took 50,000 original black people and took them to the island of Palan, and from there, they bred the lighter with the lighter until at the point of 600 years, they came with a pale race of people.
Right.
You know, now, I was kind of taken aback by what you said in terms of this was made from these Amazon women.
Yeah,
that
that's
went to the island.
Another part of it. That is a part of the Yacoubian experiment that I'm not introducing tonight, but it's a real part. And this is why, in what I discussed tonight, if you kind of pay attention to what I'm saying, and even go back and listen to the show, when I talked about the non-relational aspects to Africans, I was using what's called haplogroup studies. The haplogroup studies are the male seed. So the male seed shows those SNPs, or singular nucleotide polymorphisms, that have no relation to the white race. Black women can't make that same claim because some of their mitochondrial DNA is related to the white races. So when you look at the modern DNA studies, and you look at the ancient traditions, and you look at the Yacoubian folklore, you have to admit that in history, somewhere, black women were able to do some type of activity to create the white race, and that the black man is not related to them genetically at all. So in our explanation, if we go to the Greek sources, we can see that the Greek sources admit that the seven doves or the seven daughters of Atlas were the matriarchal mothers of their civilization. That is just the truth. And on the island of Pelan and throughout the Aegean Sea, on the island of Samothrace, on the island of Lesbos, on the island of all these places, you had these experiments going on with women. They were parthenogenic experiments, and they brought about a people who have no genetic affinity to. So people can argue with that, but it's real. It's real.
Now, without a doubt, I mean, you know, I'm gonna tell you, brother Dr. Ali, man, you bring in some advanced knowledge, but I think it's a tad bit too much. I think it's a little bit, tad bit too much. You know what I'm saying? When you bring it to a people whose mind is in darkness, I believe, because that's overwhelming light. You know what I'm saying? You bring it, and I believe in trying to get all people safely to the other side, that it may, you know what I'm saying, it'll blind them, you know. But nevertheless, man, the vegetables, and where can I get the diet that you on right now? Because me and my wife, we experiment with a juice and vegetable fast, right, you know, so to speak.
If you want to get the diet that I'm on, I'm going to recommend a sister, because I always like to use the sisters, because the sisters put in their hard work. There's a sister who's 71 years old. Her name is Annette Larkins.
Okay.
She has a website that's called AnnetteLarkins.com. That's A-N-N-E-T-T-E Larkins, L-A-R-I-N-S. And she has a book called Journey to Health 1 and 2, where she goes through all her living food recipes.
Yeah, my wife, she's been in communication with that sister, man. She motivated us in terms of just going ahead and doing it. You know, I read How to Eat to Live, and you know what I'm saying? We try to live by the dietary, you know what I'm saying, restrictions of how to eat to live. But I mean, this the sister is a prime example of how to eat to live. You know, ain't no question.
She's 71 years old, but look at her.
You know, but I gotta give you a big ups, man, on that black reddish you put out, man. I got some in the fridge, trying to get my hands on some seeds right now.
Yes, sir, God.
And also, a sister asked a question. She said, "Why are these wicked doctors and scientists taking the black woman's uterus? And is it possible to reverse a hysterectomy?"
Wow. All right. Well, one of the reasons that they're taking the hysterectomy or taking the uterus via the hysterectomy is because of the commercialization of it. They can take the nanocarbons, the blood that's a part of it, et cetera, and use it in organ regeneration technology. There's a company called Celgene that does that. LifeCord, LifeBank USA is another company that takes the blood to do that. It's in cosmetics. It's being used in vaccines. So they're making money off of it. That's why they're taking it. If anybody, man, let me say this. If anybody wants to regenerate tissue, I'm going to say this based on experimentation and knowledge of this. If you have lost any tissue, ovum, uterus, whatever, there's no way that you can grow an organ back except one diet on this planet. And you don't have to stay on it, but you have to do it long enough to regenerate the tissues. And that is a all-fruit-based diet. The reason why you have to have an all-fruit-based diet is because fruit are made of carbon, hydrogen, and oxygen. They have no nitrogen inside of them. And nitrogen is a poison. And when nitrogen gets inside of the body, it's converted to ammonia, and it inhibits regeneration. So you don't even want, if you want to do regeneration, you would be at least 6 months on fruit alone if you had something taken out or something clipped away. If you want to keep the organs clean, you can introduce plants. Plants have nitrogen in their stems. And, you know, people beat up on the messenger sometimes, but one of the things he put in How to Eat to Live that's significant is, one, we shouldn't be eating flesh, even though he said if you eat flesh, eat this type. He said don't eat flesh. And the next thing he said, don't eat a lot of leafy green vegetables. Now, some people take that and they say, well, he don't know what he's talking about. I eat leafy green vegetables. Leafy green vegetables have nitrogenous alkaloids in them. And not that you shouldn't eat them, it's just that they're not better than other foods at regeneration. You could take leafy green vegetables and plants and cure diseases with it, but you will not be able to regenerate tissues, which means that you can kill certain substances, but the tissue itself won't regenerate. In order to regenerate, you need the things that are propellers of melanin or melanosomes, and that is carbon, hydrogen, and oxygen. And the reason why that works, and I have used it to regenerate people's organs, is because it takes the frequency valence of the mitochondria to a speed, because the mitochondria spin in a cell.
Right,
and once
right.
that magnetic field hits 380 nanometers of light frequency, then you have the complete ability to rebuild any tissue that's there. Now, to make it even a little bit more advanced, there was a white boy who wrote a book called The Blueprint to Immortality. His name is Harold Saxton Burr. And what he found out is that there are magnetic energy fields to every life form. And when the body is vibrating...
What's the name of the book?
Blueprint for Immortality. And there's another scientist who dealt with something called photo repair. His name is, what's the scientist's name? Man, I forgot his name. He's a German. But anyway, he dealt with a concept.
Them Germans be dealing with that science, man.
Yeah, they do. They do. And photo repair basically says you can regenerate tissues if the tissues are vibrating at a certain frequency. And that is synthesized with sunlight at 380 nanometers, which is the highest level of UV light. If you can get your body on that frequency, which can only happen with fruit, then you can regenerate tissues.
Yeah, Mother Stonetta was talking about
it. Back, they would need a 6-month fast on only fruit.
Wow. Yeah, man. Wow.
Yes, like
doctor speaking, huh? Praise due to Allah. Brother, you know, man, I listened to you, brother, and man, you say some powerful things, but the only thing I can't fathom, you know what I'm saying, for the sake of me is, I've heard you say, and I don't know if your disposition is still the same, that you don't believe that the Most Honorable Elijah Muhammad is physically alive. You
right.
know, I don't. I never heard you say anything about in terms of you, whether you believe Master Farah Muhammad is still physically alive or not. But the Most Honorable Elijah, we believe that the Most Honorable Elijah Muhammad is still physically alive.
I feel you.
And he stated before he left that he was going to study the science of the atom and that he was going
right.
to the wheel, you know.
Right.
And I can't think of no other place that he could be other than the mother's wheel, you know.
Right.
Taking into consideration the knowledge, just the knowledge that you have in terms of the physical anatomy and how
right.
it works in terms
right.
of slowing down the aging process. Here's a man who was taught by a master, you know what I'm saying? In many fields,
right.
but particularly we're going to deal with how to eat to live. You know, here's a man who was taught how to eat to live. You know, I mean, could you explain why you do not believe that the Most Honorable Elijah Muhammad is physically dead or I mean physically alive? I don't understand.
Well, yeah, I can do that. I can do that for you. And
we
then,
believe that he's physically alive and is very much in power.
Right,
and
right.
He told,
I agree that he's in power, but I don't agree that he's in power by being physically alive. And let me explain. The Honorable Elijah Muhammad has made many statements, and in order to come to a conclusion about it, you have to gather all of his statements. But the key word is here is belief. Belief means that you do not have sound evidence. So now, I have proposed to the groups that are saying that he's alive that they go to the Attorney General and the children and relatives of Elijah Muhammad to this day, and that there's a process that is allowable through the Attorney General through filing in court to exhume the body to test it. There is this can be done. It's very easy to do. You can look up the Illinois state law to do it if they wanted to do it.
Mm-hmm.
So that's one thing. We don't have to fathom about it because the minister said that he would stop teaching if he was not physically alive, which I don't think he should do. I think he should keep teaching.
No, he said he would stop teaching if you could resume the body of Elijah Muhammad and compare with the teeth of the Mexican and Dennis. I mean, compare the teeth of the dentist in Mexico, and if it matches Elijah Muhammad, then he'll sit down.
Right.
No
right,
one
right.
has
proven
that.
But that's not the point. That's not the most important point. The most
and
important.
Also, now his children stated that the man that they seen in that casket, that the mole, they said that the marks on his face, that they said no, nah, they had to step back because it,
now,
I got the words on it. They say,
yeah,
Brother Ali,
here,
they say that this is not our father.
listen.
They say, okay, man, the marks are on the wrong side, brother.
Okay, listen.
This is what they're saying.
That is.
They had to recant what they were saying, and then if you're a brother,
brother,
people just sit out and listen to you.
Hold on, because I want.
Hold on, we can see how advanced Caucasians have with their little one book of mathematics, right or wrong.
Listen, I'm not.
They got one book of mathematics, and they can get to the point where they can clone people.
Okay,
you know what I'm saying?
Let me explain something to you.
With technology, hold on, I'm closing up. With the technology that Master Farah Muhammad has, I think that they have not only mastered cloning, but they have surpassed that type of technology. We believe that the body that wasn't Elijah Muhammad's body, it was a clone, a lookalike, and then pulled off by the supreme scientist, Master Farah Muhammad. You know, and Honorable Elijah Muhammad said that Master Farah Muhammad wouldn't have told him how he would escape. Master Farah Muhammad would have told him how he would have escaped. Man, he didn't know what he would do.
Brother.
And they had witnesses of scientists in the hospital when Elijah was there, man, and a black cloud came over the hospital. But you got your beliefs the way in terms of what you believe.
I got to stop you now.
You know what I'm saying? I personally believe the most honorable Elijah Muhammad still physically alive. Master Farah Muhammad still physically alive. And the world will soon see him very shortly.
Yes, sir. Thank you, soldier. I appreciate that. I respect your belief, brother.
Absolutely, man.
I humbly disagree, but I do not disagree that the wisdom, the knowledge, the power, and every word that the man spoke will come into existence, but he also was very specific about how that would come into existence. He didn't say he was going to go up and get a book. What he said is that after he passed, or after he left, that there would be no successors, that we would form ourselves into a government, and that we would ignite his teachings into the new Islam. So that's how I look at it. I don't deal with belief, because he told us in the Theology of Lecture series that knowledge destroys belief. I think that people need to believe in that because they are unaware of their own power and potential. And until they get to the level that they mature into their own power and potential, they will need these crutches that are being given to them. But I respectfully say that even though I don't agree, we're still family, and I will war with you against the enemy.
Absolutely.
Day in, day out.
Absolutely.
You are my brother in Islam, and we have the same father, and we have the same ministers, and I love and respect all of them, even if I don't agree. So all I'm saying is,
I've heard you say that on numerous occasions, despite your disagreements of you, how you feel about Brother Farrakhan, you know, who stated that, and he has stated to this day, that the Honorable Elijah Muhammad is the eternal leader of the Nation of Islam.
That
he just sitting in the seat as the father over the house, you know.
Yes,
but despite you and his differences, I believe personally, you know what I'm saying, that's, man, this enemy, man, he's wanting to kill both of us, you and me.
Yeah, he wants to kill all of us, brother. All
you know.
And all we got to do.
And that if we can just work through our differences, man, until we get on the other side. And once we get on the other side, until the beast's power is broken,
I agree.
You know, man, I ain't like the way you done this right here, man. Because I'm telling you, brother, brother Dr. Ali, man.
We even though we disagree on that particular point, Allah knows best, brother, and Allah will show and prove. So our job is to work together to continue to raise our people, to point them in the right direction, to point them to the teachings of the Most Honorable Elijah Muhammad, and for us to support each other as much as we can, so that we can, you know, fulfill our objectives, and that's what I'm all about, brother. So even if I have a disagreement, even if it's a strong disagreement, listen, we Muslim followers of the Honorable Elijah Muhammad, and we are brothers in that, and we will never be anything other than brothers. I will never let nobody take that away from me. When I was growing up, I disagreed with my sisters and my brothers. We fought each other, but when it was time to go out to somebody who wasn't a part of the family, we put all that down, and we hugged up and made sure that we was protecting each other. And that's always been my spirit as a FOI, and I will never allow that spirit to be the soldier. So I'm with
you.
And
that's real. Another thing, brother, in closing, you mentioned about us living in a binary solar system. I believe I'm pronouncing that right, which means we're living in a solar system with two suns.
Yep.
And some years ago, and you, I got to say, you brought knowledge to me about what the Most Honorable Elijah Muhammad said in terms of him writing a letter to Brother John, was it 2X?
Yeah, yeah.
Okay, about the Caucasians, they call it Elenin.
Yeah, yep.
But I went on Google some years ago, but they had it blacked out. I couldn't see it, you know, in that part of the solar system.
I have a documentary that I did on it, and it gives you the coordinates to use the online telescope so that you could see it. It's at my website. I think it's on DrAliMuhammad.com. It's called Ellen and the Black Star Documentary, and we highlight that people could use the Google or the other types of telescopes online because it's up there. You can see it now with the infrared telescopes, and they know it's up there.
So when now I'm not denying that it's not up there, but my question is, and I believe it's up there, brother. You know, when would it brighten up? You know, like in the movie Riddick. We've seen the movie Riddick, man. It had two sons.
Right.
I'm
not in control of that process, brother. If I was in control of that process, I could tell you. I'm just reporting what the messenger said so we could see that every word that he said is manifested and so that we could see how his words are synchronized with the black traditions on the planet, which also spoke about that this would happen as a major part of prophecy. So I can't turn it on, brother. I have my own thoughts or whatever, but I'm just going to leave them as thoughts because I'm not that knowledgeable.
Well, I want to thank you for your time, brother. May Allah continue to bless you with life, health, and strength, brother. I look forward to you seeing you, brother's touring now here in Atlanta, Georgia. When you think you'll be down in this area?
Yes, sir. Absolutely. May Allah bless you and your family, too, as well, soldier.
Brother, when you think you'll be down in Atlanta, Georgia?
We striving for May 25th. If we can get that and get our brothers down there, get us down there, we're going to be down there late May.
Okay, late, man. All right, man. Inshallah, I hope to see y'all, brother. Absolutely. Thanks for your time, brother, Dr. Ali Muhammad. Assalamu alaikum.
Thanks, man. All right. That was a long one. Brother got it in. All right. Let's. We're going to take some other callers. I lost my chat. I don't even know where it is. If y'all saying something on the chat, I do not see it. All right. Let's take some more callers if I can get it on. All right. Let's see. Let's take another caller. Caller calling in from 615-474. You on Aboriginal Radio. Peace, family.
Peace, Brother Ali Muhammad.
How are you, sir?
I'm good. First, I'd like to commend you and say I do admire your work. I do want to have permission to challenge you on something.
Come on, challenge me. I love it.
My name is Lex Vortex. I made a video, actually YouTube video, in response to you and Minister Enke's claims of, you know, the Rhesus monkey theory and all that. This is what I want to say. Everything you say makes great sense. Matter of fact, I haven't seen another black man put together things like you in recent history. I'm going to tell you that much. I'm a supporter of you and your program, everything. Here's my problem with the analysis is that the thing is empirical evidence, meaning that you're gathering the information, you put it together correctly. But what I asked in the video I made is, do you have the hands-on experimentation to prove it? Meaning, like, the information that you tell us about that was put out by these scientists on all these different topics of biology, they actually had the equipment and facilities to actually look at this stuff. And I think what we lack is, are you able to prove this stuff by showing me this operationally? You know what I mean? Can you show me this under a microscope? Have you looked at a cell under a microscope? Can you show me your hands-on experience with biology in its way? That's my only issue I have in terms of being able to empirically prove what you're saying.
Yeah. All right. And this is about scientific processes, which is why at the beginning of the show, I worked to help as much as I could, and maybe if you go back you can hear it, to disqualify what we consider to be authentic. And what I mean by that is I have microscopes in my house. I have quantum magnetic analyzers. I got all kind of equipment, right? I can take you in my house right now and tell whether your pineal gland is calcified, literally, not just with, I'm talking about with equipment. But that doesn't mean anything to me. And the reason why that doesn't mean anything to me is because every process in life has an end game. So when someone says they want something proven to them, what are they actually looking for? If white people say they can look under a microscope, which I have one right downstairs, and they can say, look, this is a chromosome in vitro, which I can produce right downstairs. I can take blood from my own body, put it inside of a Petri dish, and look at it under a microscope. And then they can say, look, the white blood cells are splitting. Then they can also say, it's splitting in the Petri dish, but we don't see the chromosomes. We've never seen the chromosomes. Then, again, what is proof? What have they proven? What I want you to do is tell me what they have proven, what I am unable to prove. When I reference their sources of study, I'm only referencing things that prove that their processing is either whack or they only matching indigenous records. So if I say white people produce sunburn cells, it doesn't take a lab to see that. All right? A sunburn cell can be evident in what we call melanoma when white people have too much exposure to the sun. And that is shown by freckles and moles on their body when there's overexposure. What they do is they take that, all right, out of somebody's skin, put it under a microscope, and say, look, this is a sunburn cell. So they say after they put it under a microscope, and this is a technique and procedure of inquisitive deception, after that they can label it under a lexicon and they can say, have us say, look, this is a sunburn cell. So all I'm saying is scientific processes have an end game. What is the white man's end game? The white man has not proved anything. What has he proved? If somebody can bring me all of the proof of what the white man has brought as proof of what? When I deal with proof, I deal with someone comes to me with HIV, in 60 days they don't have it. No white man can do that. I don't need a lab to do that, even though I have lab equipment to test them. I could take my same quantum magnetic analyzer and test every human toxin in their body and give them a 150-page printout. You see what I'm saying? So I do have lab equipment, all right? And I do test. So what the purpose of the test is primarily to give people a left brain data download that they're used to. Because other than that, if they were on my same page and we came in, I would be looking at their eyes, I would be looking at their hands, I would be looking at their teeth, I would be looking at their birth chart, the positions of their planet, to tell them what's going on with them psychologically and biologically. I wouldn't need not one of those things. I am fully ingrained in methodologies, and those methodologies are more acute because when someone comes in with an immune issue, no one who is in Western medicine can identify what the psychological issue is. When someone comes in with a pancreas issue, they can't identify what mode or dimension of their life are they deprived of the correct operational behavioral dynamic where they feel stressed and now it's manifesting in the inability of the chromium or the insulin to bind to the sugars in their body. See, all these things mm-hmm. have behavioral connections. White folks are not telling you that because they don't care, because they don't have a spiritual base in game.
Right. So I understand what you're saying with that, bro. I mean, if you can fix something, obviously it works if you know how. But what I'm just asking, for instance, if you had the right environment, could you display a human being exposed to a sulfur-based environment? And if I could give you the equipment and the facility and the time to do it, could you demonstrate a human devolving into a monkey? That's the type of experimentation I'm talking about. I'm not doubting your knowledge.
Right.
I'm just saying that when you see science, you see that they demonstrate what they're talking about. Would you be able to demonstrate this sulfur-based thing and devolution with cells or any way? Is there an observable way?
It could be done. Yeah, that could be done. And I explained it to you because I know exactly the process that would be needed. What you would need is what's called a moo cage. A moo cage is a cage that's encased in a certain type of metal that can block out the Earth's magnetic field at certain levels. So if you could attempt to simulate what happened in the Lake Toba catastrophe in, let's say, 6 months in a moo cage, you could put a human being inside of a moo cage, which would be considered unethical, all right? But you would put a human being inside of a moo cage, block out magnetic frequencies to a certain level, and watch what happens to that particular person. Now, this has been done. Gene Bonley, who does the magnetic mattressing healing dynamics, has placed people into moo cages for very short time periods because of laws and ethics issues. But what he showed is that the people began to go through psychosomatic neural relapse, which is basically lose their mind in short times. They put mice in moo cages, and they became obese. So the point that I'm making is, yes, I could have set up that experimental data. If I had the money and we could do that, we could. I don't know if we could put a person in, but we could definitely, if we got the right licenses, put some monkeys in and see if we can raise them.
Could it be displayed on a small level even with cells is what I'm saying. I mean, I just think that's the level we got to get to scientifically if we're going to make, you know, certain claims that may, even though they may be true, but you know, science is based on empirical evidence and experimentation.
I feel you, but here's the problem with the cells. When you take something, this is what I've been trying to say all night, when you take a cell out of the body, it's out of its magnetic field. And the magnetic field is the thing that gives its ability to carry out all of its proper dimensional physiology, anatomical realities. So when you put it into a petri dish and start testing it, you have just divorced yourself from knowing how it will operate in vivo. In vivo is how it operates inside the body as opposed to outside of the body. So if you're going to test cells, you have to set up a mechanism to test those cells while the cells are still a part of the body matrix, which is what they're trying to get into when they're getting into the PET scans and the high levels of X-ray crystallography and looking at things, but it's just not enough. There's a need for another type of operation. But again, when you're doing that and you want to get an end result, you know, when you sit down and measure it, what is it that you're trying to accomplish? And when I look at white people and what they're trying to accomplish, if you really pay attention to what they're trying to accomplish, they're trying to figure out more about themselves that they don't know, which is cool. If we wanted to do the same thing, then we would have to set up the mechanisms to do so. Some of those things, I have no idea how to do those things. If we sat down and we figured those out, we could do that. But if we take cells outside of the body and we're trying to process how a sulfur-based cell transfers itself to a selenium-based cell, it's not going to be the same in vivo, which means that we'll be putting cells, and as soon as we take them out of their in vivo environment, if we cannot reproduce that level of magnetism, then what's going to happen is going to start mitotic division, and we're going to have to introduce some type of enzymic reactions in it to slow it down or to speed it up or whatever we want to do, and it's going to be different than what it happens in the body. So what we need is another level of science that we're not on yet, and that's a part of us postulating how to get there. I don't know yet, but you can keep searching.
Yeah, Peace, I understand what you're saying, but I think at some point we have to get to that level where we have the institutions and facilities to actually, you know, demonstrate this stuff.
I agree, bro. And that's a money issue. That's an investment issue. That's an institutional issue. And what we have to do is, if we have some small institutions that are workable, try to make them bigger and get that guac so we can do these experiments.
Because other than that, it's, you know, really scientifically, even though it's solid, it's still a theory. Until you can reproduce something and have it reproduce the same thing every time, it's a theory.
Yeah, I agree.
Right. But Peace, brother, man, you're brilliant. And Peace, keep doing what you're doing.
Yes, sir. I appreciate your call, bro. Thank you, bro. All right. Let's see if we got some more callers who want to call in. Our call-in number is 646-381-4991. We are only on for 10 more minutes, so I'm going to try to get all the callers that I can get. Caller calling in 813-516. You want to ask the radio? 813-516. You are on Aboriginal Radio Speech Family. All
right. I don't think that person wants to talk. All right, let's go to the next caller. Calling in 817-938. You on Aboriginal Radio. Peace.
Peace, brother. How you doing? Start off with saying assalamu alaikum to you. Hey, brother, I've listened to you for a small period of time, and although I can understand the concepts you lay out, I can't say I'm as well-versed in the medical aspect of the things that you speak of. So in reference to that, just to put a brother on a path, just suggest some reading for a brother so I can start heading in the right direction in that regard, because I would like to really understand what you get. I understand what you're getting at the root of, but I would like to know and not just being told of the things and that kind of thing.
All right, so I'm going to offer some of my books and offer some books I mentioned earlier. There's two books on the dietary aspects written by Annette Larkins. They're called Journey to Health, Parts 1 and Part 2. Her name is Annette, A-N-N-E-T-T-E, Larkins. She's a 71-year-old raw foodist, and she talks about preparing meals. She gives the ways to prepare them and general nutrition, and she is evidence of her success. So that's a beautiful sister to get a book from. Another author is, this is a white guy, but he has some good material that was used by some of our teachers, like Dr. Sabi. This guy's name is Arnold Ehret, E-H-R-E-T. He wrote the book Mucusless Diet System. And he also wrote
Wait. Spell that last name again, brother.
Ehret. That's E as in equality, H as in he, R as in righteous, E-T, equality, truth, Ehret. Arnold Ehret. And he wrote two books, Mucusless Diet System, and he wrote another book called Rational Fasting. And if you Amazon him, you'll pull up all of his books. He has some pretty good materials on fasting, on dietetics, on some of the experiments that I said I'm doing on myself right now, which is the fruit fast and other things. That's a pretty good material. You can also get my book. It's called Aboriginal Diet of the Gods. It is available on my website, which is at aboriginalmedicalassociation.org. That's aboriginalmedicalassociation.org. I have a full book. It's a health manual. It's also a dietary and health course that we have in there with 7 homework assignments, things that you can do to test foods, lab experiments that you can do in your own home on foods to test to see whether the foods are hybrids or not or genetically modified, and ways to do analysis. It gets kind of complicated, but it has some very basic parts in it. It has some recipes in it that we put in here, about 30 pages of recipes, shopping lists, a whole lot of things that are in that book. So those are three places that you could start if you're going to get some books on health, on diet, and on further study on some things. Unless you're looking for something else, those are pretty good.
Well, that's it, Morris. I appreciate that.
Yes, sir. Absolutely, bro. All right. Let's see who we got else. Who else is calling? We got a caller calling in from. There's so many callers coming in. Trying to get to everybody. Caller calling in from 704-298. You on Aboriginal Radio. Peace, family.
Hi, Dr. Ali. How are
you? Hi. I'm wonderful. How are you?
Great. I just wanted to know what kind of advice would you have for white people who don't want to be. Let's just say they want to increase their melanin.
Right.
You know,
if they want to increase the melanin, that's going to be difficult. They can increase certain parts of their pigment. One of the things that's very important for them is to lower what's called the white adipose tissue, which means they're going to need some supplements that are very good or some plants that are very good at killing funguses. And they're going to have to be careful with these plants. Some of the basic ones are black walnut, all right, burdock, blue vervain, and dandelion.
some really basic plants that can help with purifying the blood. The issue with them is a dietary issue, and it's also a limited exposure to sunlight. They can test themselves to expose themselves to limited amounts of, sunlight, but I would recommend they use certain oils on their skin to protect them, like coconut oil and others, when they go out into the sun. I recommend the book, too, by Arnold Arendt, Mucusless Diet System, because he was a white man, and you can look at him physically and see that he improved his pigment somewhat during his lifetime. And one of the things that is necessary for them to attempt to do is to lower the amount of white blood cells they have in their body. Even though we are taught that white blood cells are the key to immunity, they are not. They're actually toxic to the body, and they are part of what keeps the albumin levels high in the body, and they eat red blood cells, literally. So they would have to find means and measures to lower the white blood cell count, and one of the ways that you do that is you eat living foods. So that could help them, just like it's going to help everybody else as well.
So that's probably why so many white people are eating healthier these days.
Yeah,
like,
I guess they tune in.
Green vegetables, and it seems like a lot of white people are vegan. So
yeah,
this would help both black and white people.
Well, it will help black people in a whole other way, because the anatomies are different and the response mechanism is going to be completely different in the black body, especially when it's exposing itself to sunlight and getting pretty good exercise. So it will definitely help both, though.
Okay. As far as, like, not finding non-hybridized food to eat, I think that most people on this planet who are sane don't want to eat food that don't have seeds. I think that goes across the board, you know, amongst blacks and whites.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. And I have another question about blood typing. Is it possible that a person's blood type can be changed from a transplant, like a liver transplant?
It could be. What's supposed to happen is they're supposed to separate the platelets and the erythrocytes a specific way so that they could deal with that. Oh, we only got 90 seconds. But it could be affected antigenically, but usually you might get, like, some kind of damage that shows a sign that the blood, you know, the blood typing was different. But the blood can definitely weaken through those things, and it could change.
Okay.
So I haven't seen a case.
If I know two people who claim that they have O negative and O positive blood, they are white. Does that mean that they have an ancestor?
Yeah,
somewhere
that
back
means
in the line?
That means that they were a part of a different branch of white folks who have a specific HLA, human leukocyte antigen. And this is why I mentioned some of these ancient experiments, because when we're saying O is the original blood, it is, but it's still antigenic. It's not closer to the blood that we had prior to our experience with them. But there are classifications of white people who do have that typing, and they got it from their lineage, from their interfacing with us, either through miscegenation or through being descendants of specific pools of black women who were in those Mycenaean civilizations. I've done a lecture on that blood type, and I believe it's at DrAliMuhammad.com, but we are out of time. I got to shut it down. Thank y'all for calling in tonight. We'll be back on next week. We're back on regular schedule. I only got about 10 minutes, so watch out for us on the Genetic Fear of a Black Planet Tour. Contact us if you want to reach us at 1-888-574-9042 or at www.indigenousgovernment.org or on Facebook, Aboriginal Chief Ali. You'll see all the links. Thank the brothers and sisters for calling in tonight. Hopefully I said something that made sense and began the process of us addressing these apparent authorities in respect to medicine and all the other things that we have been discussing. I thank the brothers and sisters who did take the time out to listen to the show. It was a last-minute aspect to it, but we got through it. We went through 3 hours, and we thank the family. We will be back on for Aboriginal Radio next week. Signing off, Dr. Ali Muhammad. Peace. Sotep. Assalamu alaikum.